This week, we rejoice in my return to the pod and hear my takes on last week's topics before diving into new content such as the Star Wars Outlaws story trailer. After discussing our hopes and wishes for the game, we move on to our review of the latest episode of Bad Batch. After debating the nature of midichlorians and the possibility of one of the Batch using the Force before the show's finale, we pass through the Stormwall to review Star Wars The High Republic Defy the Storm by Justina Ireland and Tessa Gratton. If you're interested in the science and history of hyperspace travel or desire to see how Jedi Master's privilege come into question, you won't want to miss this book and our review. Let's go!
Joining us today, we're trapped inside the Stormwall, but we've got our host back. Our good friend and host Ben is returned to the podcast, so maybe we can defy the storm
together. To escape. If we work hard with our now that you have your moral center back, you rapscallions,
yes,
we can finally soldier ahead and cover some Star Wars. No, guys, I loved listening to the pod last week. That was really fun. Pretty much no notes, you know, you guys, you just covered it. I mean, so much I missed out. R.I.P. the Havoc Marauder.
Zero to zero.
I know. Lots
of notes.
Aren't you proud though? I only made one comic book reference and we didn't talk
guys,
about it.
I can't believe you covered all that in an hour. You guys were shooting through it. I'm usually the one that's like at an hour and 45 minutes. I'm like digging my heels in, trying to pull us out. And
I think the feature, not a bug, is that when you have three people, Grant and I were talking about this afterwards. It's like someone says something and then both people react and other people react to what the other people said.
It's like so exponential,
it builds, right? In a good way.
We give our input on each person's thoughts. And so that just takes, 10 minutes each for each person's sort of input. It was a shorter pod, but we missed you, man. It was not the same.
No, seriously.
It was great. I loved how you went hard on having the big three in Mando and Grogu. That was pretty cool.
We could have stayed there talking about Mando and Grogu for another
hour. I was like, and, this is what you're talking about?
We need to get off this because it was basically just like theory crafting about Mando and Grogu for 20 minutes.
Yeah. I think I'm really excited about learning the nature of Morgan Elsbeth's relationship with the Empire. Where does she come from?
Details of the Empire, that trailer, and what we got there.
Like, did she used to serve the Empire? Is she an enemy of our enemy? What's going on?
I think she's one of those really complex characters where it seems like the droid army destroyed her city and people. And basically she hates the separatists. And then She basically fought for the proto empire, essentially, just like maybe a lot of these like Tarkin figures sort of like, coming to these fronts and controlling things. But they're basically all then transfer into the Imperial, Navy.
Right. But maybe she doesn't look ignorant to me. Like, I feel like she would know that there might be some dark energy running the Empire. And I just wonder, maybe she's
she meets Thrawn, who's so cunning and not like the other, officers, essentially. Right. He's different, right?
So maybe he grooms her, into a different point of view.
I wonder if this is going to make her into a bit of a tragic character, which is just like, we know so little about her that you could really do this with her, where, like you said, like, the Separatists destroyed her village. It seems what's going on. She has a confrontation with Grievous, which, again, it's all just the Empire, right? Like, that's what I find is so devious about this. So she's living this life of just like buys in with the Empire because the Empire killed her, the Empire through the Separatists killed her family. Then she's groomed by Thrawn. Like, it's just one of those things where she's just, and you almost see that if that's her story, the her ending is very tragic. in Ahsoka, right? Just like, okay, bye. You stay here and take care of everyone. You hold down the fort.
Wait, though, no, this was not the idea at all. Yeah. Yeah. I don't think we've heard the last of Morgan Elsbeth. And hell hath no fury than a Dothmere witch reborn.
I hope not, because it's a compelling character for a character that's only been in like 7 episodes of a Star Wars thing, right?
I wonder. I think she was granted apotheosis by the sisters, so I think she can come back, and I hope she comes back more interesting, you know.
Yeah.
Dynamic. And yeah, maybe we'll get a hint in Tales of the Empire. So I have to put stuff like straight in my noggin, because so much has happened in the last couple weeks with Star Wars. They've like gone so hard. Right. So I put together a little timeline of releases here. All right. To walk us through it. So right now we know May 1st is going to be the Bad Batch finale. So we got 3 single jobs the next 3 weeks. I thought we might get a double at the end or something, but not so.
I think that might be a double length of an episode, though. Do not be, because the season is 1 episode shorter than the last two episodes, so I'm guessing that's going to be like a 45-minute
Makes sense. I don't know why they ever do that. Like, why don't they just have 45-minute episodes every once in a while? Like,
but why do they have like a 3-hour episode every time?
Yeah, I mean, Taste. I don't know. Whatever. More is more.
I remember we were theorizing about the episode Juggernaut. We're like, who is the Juggernaut? Is this the scientific experiment?
That was the one thing I was screaming into the thing. I'm like, you guys know what a Juggernaut tank is. I know you know what a Juggernaut tank is.
Yeah, and then I was like oh yeah.
You're like, isn't it a ship?
Called a Juggernaut.
And I was like, no.
I honestly, I didn't know that until right.
You didn't know that's a Juggernaut super tank?
It's Juggernaut.
Oh, no. Yeah.
No. I forgot, totally, until I was like, of course.
You gotta get,
of course,
a Rogue One visual dictionary for that cut or something.
I know. They were in the Clone Wars, too.
You know, they showed up on Kashyyyk. And you look at them, and you're like, whoa, what is that thing?
My brain is a sieve when it comes to the names of weapons. Like, the fact that, like, you can, like, get all those things down
is, because
like,
because I care.
I'm like, I hear them, I'm like, Well, I didn't know. But, like, droids are down.
I was completely, you know, I totally had forgotten that. That's the name.
We're gonna have to figure out the scheduling for that week, BTWs, because that Friday is the start of the marathon.
So that's the next thing. May 3rd is our Skywalker marathon. So 8 p.m. on the 3rd to 8 p.m. on the 4th, we'll be busy in a theater with a lot of popcorn and a big tummy ache, and like really kind of bloodshot eyes, but should be amazing. I don't know how we're going to do it, but I'm just going to throw myself into it and, watch Star Wars.
Naps, lots of naps.
Dream come true.
Right.
All the films.
That's going to be rad. Yeah.
So excited. Right. Terrified.
Awesome. Then May the 4th is Tales for the of the Empire, right? And I heard you say, Adam, you're like, do I stay up after, like, I don't know. Maybe I'll be so cracked out that I'll just be like, I just need 1 more hour of Star Wars. Thank you.
Right? It's not that hard. Also, during that during the marathon, they're doing a sneak peek into the Acolyte.
Cool.
So we're going to have that. I think they're doing right after the first one.
I think I'll bring a little recorder in that I don't think they'll be able to find, and we can just pass it around and maybe make some notes, and maybe we'll cobble a pod together out of that.
I don't think, we can do a pod after that. We can do that. We can do vidbits too. We can do whatever we want. But I think I like the idea. It's similar to what we did with episode 9. we can also, they're not going to.
Episode 9 knee jerk reaction was some of the greatest podding we've ever done.
That was so much fun. That was one of my favorite things.
If you thought you were early to, you know, a reaction to a film, or especially that film, I feel like, you know, opening night, what do we see it like? We saw it very close to the release, and then we immediately shared.
We saw it tonight. So just as a reminder, here's what we did. It was amazing because because Ben bought his recording material. We went first. We recorded our pre-thoughts. Then we saw it once, and then we ran out to the car, recorded an immediate reaction pod to it. Which I still remember Ben's reaction as we were walking back. Did you guys really not like it? And then we watched the second time with our significant others who came for the second one. And then we went back to Ben's place to record a third.
Yeah.
So that thing's like an epic 2-hour thing. I think it was episode 100 of our old format. I think.
Oh, yeah. Right, yeah.
It's pretty, if you want to go back.
That's right. For Core World News. Which is still, mm-hmm. I think in this list of, episodes, maybe, I don't know. Anywho's. That was a blast,
yeah.
Man. I can't believe, I mean, we potted forever, right? It was like a 3-hour pod. But that was everything we wanted. We had a lot to talk about, and watching it twice, I think, really let us get all the information to sink in. So it was great.
Yeah. Right. Especially that movie. Yeah. It starts so fast.
I like cannot believe that.
Yeah. I'm doing it again. The next feature, Grogu, Mando and Grogu.
I was going to say, get ready for May 2026. We're going to do it, or 2026. We're doing it again.
Yeah.
I just can't wait to see Phantom Menace again. Like, I am thrilled to see the prequels again.
Episode 2, baby. I am the most excited. I don't know why.
We're going to be fired up for the prequels, because that's where we're going to have all our energy. And then it's just going to be like,
yeah.
And like, I think like Empire Strikes Back is going to be at like 4 in the morning.
Is that part of the thing?
I know. Obviously I'm an original trilogy kid because of my age, but oh boy, those things are like warm blankets to me. There's a good chance I sleep through at least 1.5 of those movies accidentally. Like I wake up and suddenly it's Jar Jar screaming at me. Like I think, or not Jar Jar. I mean, it's going to be like, I guess that wouldn't work that way.
Sequels have a similar issue where it's like the final movie feels super truncated and disconnected and sort of its own thing, and also extremely truncated. And it's like, it covers so much ground dramatically for like the characters that it's just like this is too much in one. It's like these films, maybe the trilogy wasn't the answer. Maybe it should have been 4 films.
Yeah.
Yeah,
like both the prequels and the sequels.
Yeah,
like I think the Anakin turn needs like, gosh, I think it needs just a lot more work,
a little more,
you know, all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah, man.
By the way, I was gonna say Travis just shared his episode 9 experience, which he saw it. He saw it at 9 p.m. till midnight, and then had to work at 5 a.m. next morning. So, bit of a rough morning.
Yeah,
the next morning.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that's tough.
Wild. Right.
That's.
So we've gotten to May 4th.
Yeah, no. So May 4th, nice. Tales of the Empire. That's going to be dope. Acolyte premiere is June 4th. So it's like next month. June 4th. So all 1 month.
Is that going to have a theatrical release, the premiere episode?
They haven't announced it.
Yeah. But I would be surprised.
They've been flirting with stuff like that. I feel like it would be like stealing money. Like, I mean.
Carrie Ann Moss must be on the big screen.
I mean, Iger's all about getting things in the big screen. That's what happened with the Grogu.
If they're going to give us an hour and a half of content, hour and 20 minutes, put it on the big screen, man. Like, I will pay $20 to go see that.
It might be like the single greatest idea in the last decade. I was like, oh, okay. Like that. Yes.
Sorry, what was the single greatest idea? I missed it.
Go.
What was the idea, Grant?
What's up?
Sorry, what was the single greatest idea? I missed it.
Carrie and Moss as a
testing knight. 1, 2, 3. Yes.
Yeah. Knight? Master, I guess?
Dude. No. Yeah, totally.
Just
it's one of those things of just when I saw her, I'm like, oh, that's right. She hasn't been in Star Wars yet. Like how have we gotten this long?
Right.
Yeah.
It's like, why isn't Tilda Swinton a Jedi?
Right.
Like, there's certain people who just like should be Jedi at this point.
Oh, that was a weird Mandela effect, because I'm like, she was, right? Oh, no, she was the ancient one. But yeah, she totally should be. Yeah.
You've got me thinking. I'm like, who would be a good male Jedi, like classic male Jedi?
But I do want this,
like Morgan Freeman.
Jedi, I feel like a Gary Oldman who's kind of like, you know, through it.
Yeah, through it. That's what I'm saying.
Downey, through it. Like, I want those jaded Jedi too, like the ones that are like the Rael Averroes kind of types. Where are they at?
Right. James Brolin, he'd be actually a pretty fun Jedi. Any hoozle, yes, we have that. And then August 30th, this is what we learned this week. It's the Outlaws release. Star Wars Outlaws, Ubisoft's AAA Star Wars game. And I think they're going to do a series of these, and they're all going to focus on a different character. This is on the main character, Kay Vess, and her little friend, Nix. It introduced a new crime syndicate called the Zarek Besh. And
is it Zareg Besh? Did you have the subtitles?
I did not. No, I'm paraphrasing what I heard. Zarig Besh.
Zarig Besh is a very cool name.
Yeah.
I wonder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm looking it up.
And is that the name of the person or the name of the syndicate?
I think the syndicate is Zarig Besh. And then I think the person is Sleno. Which is very close to Sleemo, which I'm like, this is a little on the nose.
Yeah. Yeah. Very close to Sleemo. I bet he really got teased in grade school about that.
Oh,
right.
I think then became a mob boss.
I hate to backtrack us a little bit, but okay, this is going to be really focused. There's a metal band in Providence called Sleemo.
Yeah.
Who sings only in Huttese.
You're right, Ben. Zarek
Bash. And there you go. And dress in Star Wars stuff. They're follow them at least for their Instagram, because they're like, we keep trying to post things about our band, but we keep just posting pictures of our bassist who just looks like a Star Wars character. they're really funny. I have not had a chance to see them yet. They're playing out a lot, quite a bit. And like always when you go, there's tons of people in cosplay, but they're playing on May the 4th in Providence. And they're set. They probably go on at 9 o'clock. So if I was really hardcore, I could do a 24-hour Star Wars marathon and then go to a Sleemo show.
You got to change the I to we.
You guys want to come down to Providence? I do have in May? Yeah,
I'd like to say I've done
dumber
things, but I haven't. But I'm willing to try.
Sorry, that popped in my head.
Just
going to
be overwhelmed by will we like Star Wars after May the 5th?
Will we? Or you're that far down the rabbit hole. I miss it. I'm kind of sad that we like get these little Star Wars morsels. Like I like to just like bathe in 3 hours of Star Wars, like just go on a nice long journey in the galaxy far, far away. I think that's why I love reading.
You
the
just
books
like to here. Watch Attack of the Clones in the shower. It's not a big deal.
Yeah. Right.
Kimino just screams, take a shower.
I was about to say, I just want a Kimino themed bathroom.
Yeah, can you imagine the luxury? This is not like a corner in the place. It's just smooth white. That sounds great.
Just imagine myself flopping around, can't get standing up because it's all just
any whoozle games coming out. That's going to be super fun. Really excited about it. It looks very much like Uncharted. I don't know if any of you played the Uncharted series, but it's got that feel in the game.
So how open is this? Because this was a story trailer, and I'm just like, I almost just want the GTA trailer of like just zoom around the open world and show me NPCs just doing their own thing.
Give me the gameplay.
That's what I'm hoping for. I'm hoping like lots of groups of citizens, people walking around. I thought Jedi Fallen Order and Jedi Survivor would be like, you have to cover your face and hide your identity and sort of like sneak around cities, and there would be like lots of NPCs. Survivor had quite a bit of that in terms of like a few of the planets, but I'm hoping this one's incredibly open. And I really hope that there's a sort of open world, trailer for them to sort of show off all that, I imagine, intensive scripting for like, people walking around, patrols, vehicles, possibly things like that that are moving around an open world, like that's the trailer I'm hoping for. But this was cool. This was very cool to get introduced to the story. I did think the protag's eyeballs were doing crazy things throughout the trailer, but other than that, I thought it was cool.
I watched it before coming on the show because somehow I hadn't watched it before this episode, and I put it on the big screen with my wife before it came up. She's like, that was cool. She's like the voice acting was rough and that looked wonky, and I'm like, yeah, they'll probably clean that up a little bit, but I'm like, it's Ubisoft, they may not clean that up.
They might.
A little bit.
It was almost unpolished. Like I was like, the eyeballs are
but
in this shot, like
I just have to remind ourselves, this is what we talked about, right? Of just like more is better with Star Wars games. They all don't have to be polished to the level of that, but boy, did it look interesting on a giant, 75-inch 4K screen where I'm like, maybe I'll play my office in a smaller screen, lower def might be better.
Also, it was, so you're looking at probably a 480 format, at the max.
It's a beta, right? Yeah. It's not.
And they gave the disclaimer that was like, this is not game footage, which is like, okay. I was just,
it was in game. It looked like an engine.
Some was.
Sort of
they
stuff.
Said not all of
it. It just looked like maybe they just didn't nail maybe some few things.
Yeah.
Polished. Yeah.
Some things look like cutscenes.
I
like,
will say. Yeah, they brought up some interesting things here. So that have been kind of a little more confirmed about the play. So it says that Kay's actions will dictate how individuals slash factions react to her. So similar to like Assassin's Creed, seems like you can get like favor mm-hmm. with certain syndicates versus others, but there's not a branching narrative thread, which is fine, which is same as like Assassin's Creed. There's always a single narrative, but they can other things.
They travel around the galaxy and gain favor with different syndicates.
Yeah. It seems like
or
it.
The Empire. Okay.
Yeah, some potential yeah. game of the year. If they nail the mechanics of sort of gaining points with each syndicate, that earning you different unlocks, different mission types, yep. things like that. Like that is cool. Yeah. Like that's
yeah. So let me give you another two sentences, which makes me pretty interesting. The game can broadly be divided into three types of settings: cities, large open world areas, and space. So you already had me at space. Yeah. Add space to it.
I'm so there great. Is this space. Is there's gameplay in space.
There's space. Yeah.
Gameplay in and space.
Then, oh my goodness, guys. This could be. Yep. You know what? I forgive all the sort of unpolished bits in the trailer.
Right.
That's where I'm at. It's like I just give me the gameplay. Sort of, yeah.
All I ask for, really, like as a fan, I'm just like, oh, I really hope one day we can play an open world Star Wars game that really lets you feel like you're exploring a vast galaxy, which is so difficult to do in gaming. Yeah. I understand that having played all the.
And let me give you the second part of this. So Vess can travel the galaxy at will and take part in various side quests. So I like the at will because, like, you can technically travel in Survivor at will, but boy, does that still feel like it's on rails in terms of you're supposed to do this planet, then this planet, then this planet, then this planet, and go back here.
You can explore the most, and then everything else just feels like this condensed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like,
and you have to go to them in kind of a certain order,
and they're kind of on rails. And then you're there. Yeah.
Yeah. Which I mean, that game's amazing, but it's not open world at all.
It has one open world,
as much as they try to sell
Kobo's.
Yeah,
but things close and open-ish. Yeah. Love that game.
Yeah, I think the story was pretty good in Survivor. I think they kept up with the sort of narrative polish that I enjoy in those games.
That game was amazing. You know, that I was like almost put it back on my PS5 today because I was just like, oh, I just want to get in a game. Like, I miss that game.
Yeah.
But it's like, it, you know, once you've played, it's so story driven. Once you've, you know, I've played the story twice. I'm sort of like, well, it's not like
you don't want to fight Dagon Mara with his one arm again. Like, you're just like, I'm good. Like, that fight was so hard,
right? And unlocking the stuff, it's not like, okay, I've got all the skills now.
He did it one.
Yeah, like NG Plus was like, okay, I just kind of fire through, and you know, but you can't experience the like bounty hunter missions for the first time again, which are awesome. You know, you could restart the game, you know, just start a new game, but.
I will say I love those games. I my time playing through those games are amazing. I think narratively they're really strong Star Wars. I will always say that the second one has one of my favorite Jedi moments in all of Jedi lore.
Pulling a blaster and killing your best friend.
No, that's pretty good too. No. Just the way that was able to That game was able to make me understand how a Jedi can kill and still be a Jedi.
We could talk about that. Look,
we're gonna get into Defy the Storm later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oof.
We'll get there.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I do not think I'll ever replay those games.
Yeah. I don't think
because I play them both to 100%. I did everything I need to do in them again. I'll like rewatch the cutscenes if I need to. Like, it's just so much time in your life.
Yeah. It's a beautiful game though. So anyways, this one, thank you, Adam, for going through the gameplay again or for the first time for us. Was there anything else about the gameplay?
That's it for the gameplay. And then the other big thing is the setting of it or the time period, which is between six, right? Like, we get,
Do we see Han in Carbonite in this trailer?
Oh, we did.
We see Han. We also see Kira.
Wait.
I need to rewatch the trailer.
You think Kira was in the Kira she was in the trailer. Seat there?
Oh, wait. This
in the Crimson Dawn. Kira? That's Kira in the Crimson Dawn seat.
Right?
Confirmed.
We just read. Like, they must have been talking to each other because obviously Lucasfilm synergy. But I'm just saying, like, in silos, interconnecting networks. I'm just saying, like, they must take some of that information. So you can put Boba Fett, Bossk, Val. You can put a lot of characters.
Can you imagine if we saw Valance in this game?
Oh God, damn it,
Outlaws. No. And I wouldn't be surprised if there's a Bossk fight, and it's really hard.
Yeah,
yeah,
totally.
It should be the hardest. And Dengar should be the easiest. You should interact with him and he actually trips over his own gun and shoots himself.
That's just uncalled for.
Well, you can like blow off his arm and he can be like, all right, I give up. I'm going to go regrow my limb and we're done here.
Right. Yeah. With Bossk. I mean, this is great for comic book fans. Hopefully there'll be tons of Easter eggs there. Cause this is what the like current, all the comic book runs are right in this
Sana period. Staros, like Aphra, like there's lots of characters running
Aphra
around.
Aphra cameo.
Aphra's interesting
because please expose everyone to this character in every media, all media that takes place around the time period in which she's active, because we need an Aphra TV show. Like, it's about time.
It drives me nuts. I've literally have said to my wife numerous times, like, your favorite Star Wars character, you haven't even met your favorite Star Wars character yet. Like, you don't even realize this will be your favorite.
It's like, can we just like maybe less on the Cad Bane cameos and more on the like Dr. Aphra cameos?
Super, super good take, buddy. That's like that of the night.
I've had just about enough of him.
His story, we told his story.
We got it. He's a nefarious bounty hunter. Fine. He's very good at his job.
Yeah.
We got
it. Yeah, no, I appreciated that take you guys had the last time. I'm like, oh man, thank you. So this game, I looked at purchase options because I saw someone losing their mind because there is a $129.99 version of this game, the Ultra Pack. All right.
Do you get a statue? Do you get
what comes with the Ultra Pack?
So you want to know?
Do you get a Rebel Medallion?
Sell me on the Ultra Pack. Explain to me why when I spend this, I'm not going to be upset.
So there's like a $60 version, and there's actually a lot of stuff in there that was like, oh, okay. So if you pre-order, you receive the Kessel Runner bonus pack, including cosmetics for your speeder and the Trailblazer spaceship. Like, apparently, that's the name of your spaceship, is the Trailblazer.
It looks pretty sweet too. Yeah. It looks pretty like pretty basic. It doesn't have any
looks like a muscle car speeder
like that. It's very cool.
Yeah, I like it. I like it. I was making about the name.
It looks like an Imperial
first draft.
Trailblazer's a little first draft for you. Yeah. It's no Havoc Marauder, is what you're saying.
Yeah, every
it's no Vengeful Goddess.
Yeah,
Vengeful
Goddess. Here we go. Yeah.
Yeah.
Dude, the ship names in High Republic are some of the best names in Star Wars.
So pretty much it's skins. You get skins for the thing. That's the bonus pack for your speeder and the spaceship. But no, that's just for pre-order. Okay, so you just, if you buy it now, even if you buy the $60 version,
gotcha.
Okay. All right,
fair.
But
good.
Obviously, they don't mention, but you get that in the Ultimate Edition, of course, if you pre-order the Ultimate Edition.
Right.
They did have a note that there is in-game purchases that are optional, I think is what they said. And I'm hoping they're just
they'll be cosmetic, because that's the way we've gotten now, is that like that's the only thing that gamers will accept, which fine, whatever, it's annoying, but it's not going to make your game easier, just make you look cooler,
it's not gonna be pay to win sort of structure.
It better not.
You get the best gun by, or best blaster by, simply just paying for it.
To think Star Wars gamers won that battle against Battlefront 2 when they started to have pay to win system and they had to completely relaunch their game. Because there was such a revolt there. So, this is your, for $129.99, you get the base game. You get the season pass, including two narrative expansions, an exclusive mission at launch that will make sense in a minute, and a character cosmetic pack. So, it's a season pass.
Yeah,
but for twice the cost of the game, and we know that there's going to be at least two narrative expansions.
Okay,
which sounds like I'm gonna have to dig out $130.
Here's the thing: it's one of those things where I'm like, that sounds ridiculous. I still will pay it. I'm just annoyed now. I'm like, fine.
I have something, Adam. The next item I think will make you feel better about your purchase.
Okay,
you get the Sabacc Shark Bundle.
Okay, all right, take $200. Can I get $200 for this, please?
Wait, I need to hear about the Sabacc shark.
Well, I mean, I'm, you know, I'm not a scientist. That's not what I went to school for. But if I'm a Sabacc shark, that means I'm good at Sabacc.
Exactly.
And if this is the Sabacc shark bundle, this means I get some aces up my sleeve for when I play in-game Sabacc. You know what I mean?
Is that what it says?
No, it just says Sabacc Shark Bundle. But if I'm, using my best guesstimation, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Wait, so Sabacc mini game mm-hmm. in Outlaws could take up a lot of time.
Do you remember in Star Wars The Old Republic, the original game, like literally in the first like thing, you walk and there's a card game mm-hmm. that you can play? Like it's in yeah. the first scene of the thing.
Yeah.
I still remember to say I played that game. I walked to that card game and I played 32. No, I played in the first Old Republic game, like the first RPG okay. Old Republic game. You wake up on the ship, you walk over. There's someone you can talk to. He has a card game. It's not Sabacc.
It's called Pazak.
Pazak. I lost. Yeah, yeah. I lost an afternoon.
Like, it was awesome.
I lost an afternoon to Pazak. Like I didn't even play the game. I like, literally was like, I should probably start playing the yeah. narrative. No, I'm gonna play another couple hands of Pazak. So like, probably what happens is I'm gonna buy this bundle, which better come with some Lando type skin. Where I better have like a real good. Ooh,
you
looking,
might get a skin
like,
of that too.
Like a, cool. like a good skin. And then you're going to be like, did you do this? Did you? I'm like, nope, still playing Sabacc. I will get to you in a few days.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if it comes with the skin and the Sabacc shark skin, like that would be dope. I mean, it's a bundle, so could be a lot of goodies in there.
Oh, you're definitely getting a unique skin. You're definitely getting a unique
maybe
outfit.
Maybe a nice
I
cape.
Imagine. And maybe it would be cool if the outfit has, if there's like basically abilities or stats on the outfit that are essentially Ooh. Like. Maybe distracts other players. Maybe players like yeah. don't play their best cards, so you have a better chance against the CPUs. Essentially,
your swag
you know what I mean?
Stats
like,
are like
so you can just earn money a little line. Quicker. Maybe the game is like no one really bests you. No one goes full Sabacc on you. You yeah. know, no one gets to drop all the cards. Like they're just kind of bad at it, and you're the best. That would be awesome.
All your swag is just like rattling
nothing's
players.
Worse than like getting a bunch of money in the open world than going to play Sabacc and losing it all. It's a video game. You have limited time. Right. Like. It'd be cool if this is actually just allowed you to win more hands.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm yeah. thinking about, you know, Ubisoft's sort of mini game in Black Sails where, you know, it's like it's a way for you to make extra money and then build your stats, like to just like earn sure. money like on the yeah. side.
Yeah. Is it going to be like Red Dead where you can kind of, it's like seamless, like you're walking around the open world, you can kind of just sit it, down.
I hope so. Right.
And
yeah.
just immediately
yeah.
kind of the camera pushes in and you get this these fun new shots of all. The characters mm-hmm. like I loved poker in Red Dead, like
yeah. there's it was so good.
You can play poker at a lot of different saloons and
I loved
spots
playing poker yeah. in Red Dead, and then when I lost all my money standing up and getting all of my money back yeah. violently.
How would you do that, Adam? How
violently would you do that? I would do it violently.
You're like, well, this was a good game, fellas.
What
you
that
really
was one
played
of my favorite
well.
Things is I played that game White Hat, and then I was trying to like complete it, so I had to go Black Hat, and like going like I want to get Black Hat as fast as possible is real fun in that game. Yeah. Just like I'm doing everything.
Oh yeah, that's like yeah, you can do that right away.
Yeah.
What was I gonna say? Yeah, I'm guessing there's probably I'm guessing combat's likely restricted in these areas though. I'm hoping you know Ubisoft can take notes from Rockstar and like really allow the player to do anything anywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
sort of have those free floating NPCs all over the place that like or kind of feel like they have their different motivations, even though it's just like three different, you know, scripted walk. Styles, you know,
right.
like, or whatever, yeah. you know, yeah. it's just like you could just it just seems to almost feel like a living, breathing world. But I imagine the like combat restricted sort yeah. of cantina atmosphere and sit down and play and change the music on the jukebox, talk to the bartender, yeah. you know, those interactions we expect.
Yeah, totally.
It's so true. And like one of my favorite things in Jedi Survivor, which I think we talked about, was like the bar, like going back to the bar yeah. and like.
Oh,
like
catching up with the regulars,
leading yeah. all that, and also like yeah. like listening to the like collecting music and listening to the music by the band, right? Like I just mm-hmm. it was super fun doing
but
that.
If you can do that in a bunch of different spots
yes.
and you
yeah.
can find all these new Sabacc tables all over the galaxy where it's like you walk into a dusty cantina and just like in the corner some people are playing Sabacc and you're That's like cool. oh sweet, this is way different than the Sabacc, you know, table on Dayu or whatever at the, you know, Two Blasters cantina or something. Nice. You know,
yeah,
like, yeah. That should be great. So wait, there's more.
There's more.
Okay.
There's more. You get the Rogue Infiltrator bundle.
Hmm.
So maybe this is a different mechanic that helps you more in game. I don't know. Maybe it's just a bunch of skins. I don't know. You know, maybe they're both just skins. I don't know. But it's the.
Does that give you like an officer's medallion or like? You know, Imperial chain codes, like
maybe
spare chain.
Maybe. I mean, then you're getting into dangerous territory because if it's like skill building.
Yeah, anything that allows you to progress in the story or just
but
be stronger at a lower level than everyone else is pretty.
It wasn't clear to me if this was going to be an open world concept to this with like other players. I don't know. I don't think so.
I don't think so, because I think they would have already been advertising that. I feel like it might be those things they add on.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, and then a digital art book, like literal minutes of fun. If they made
has anyone ever looked at a digital art book?
I think I've looked at a couple.
A digital art book?
Yeah. This is kind of common in like these things. It just is there to fluff out the like stuff.
It's just there in my Star Wars folder on my Apple Vision Pro, and I'll just tap into it, check it out.
And then it's over. I mean, if they made it so that like you could use the digital art as like backgrounds, like wallpapers for like your thing, then I would be like, okay, I'm in. That would be cool. Like, give me some dope Star Wars landscapes. I would be stoked on this, but as it stands, I'm like, meh. And then the last one. There's one last thing here, and this is fairly unprecedented. And it has two asterisks after it, and I didn't read what the asterisks were. Up to 3 days of early access to the game.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's
they're starting to do that. That's new. That's a new thing. That's pretty standard. Yeah,
yeah. So you can get in early.
So we'll all be purchasing that.
how
unbearable would it be if it's like people are already knee deep in the game and you're like, when is it? I guess
two more days. Yeah, no, that's not happening.
I'll probably get the Rogue Infiltrator one. I'll probably try to be as sort of a rebel adjacent as possible for. Vest because there's hope the white hat sort of run essentially.
Yeah. I mean, technically in that trailer the only rebel they showed was Han Solo in Carbonite.
Yeah, that's
but
true.
I'm wondering if you do get to meet up. I mean, if you're
major character essentially,
right? So I wonder if you meet anyone else.
Rain and the bounty hunters. Like, I am like, are they going to tap into all that stuff? I'm so interested to see what happens there.
So I do know that it's Kira because there was some stuff going around online and they asked Emilia Clarke and she says, no, I'm not voicing Kira. So that kind of came out that it's definitely Kira.
Okay.
But she's not voicing
Kira. That's the next best way to do the character. If she's maybe just engaged in other projects or other work, it's just like, make a really awesome sort of in-game version of, her latent, role as the leader of Crimson Dawn and sort of like what that is.
It also could be like one of those things where it's just like, I don't know how much she's actually in it. That might be, we might have seen the totality of Kira, right? Of just this like pan across whatever. And there's actually,
wait,
no
was
voicing.
That near the Han and Carbonite moment?
No, it was when they were meeting with all the syndicates and they mentioned the Pike Syndicate and the
What's
Crimson Dawn.
What's more poetic than like Kira somehow interacting with the Frozen Han and being like the sort of inversion of their upbringing and trauma that happened there. Like, it's like, now you're stuck and I'm free. Yeah. Like, has that happened?
That,
to me, I'm like, we're just dancing around. Maybe that is like what we're trying to get to.
That could be kind of cool because we never saw, like, Kira knew that Han was frozen in Carbonite and she was instrumental in freeing him. But like we
don't see that moment in War of the Bounty Hunters in the comic.
No,
we don't get
that. But we could get it in this game.
It's like Shakespeare.
You know, it would be kind of fun to get it in this game. We could have that moment where Jabba's and
me, like, that'd be so pretty. She, like, as such a beautiful moment.
She like looks and like you get that like shot that should have recognition in her face, and then she's like, "All right, now the wheels are turning again." And we know.
What do you think the shot of recognition would look like in this game? Sorry.
Oh, come on. Come on. We're just,
can you tell she's looking at the Carbonite, or does it look like she's looking at like two separate things?
I always liked Kira, but she seems like she's always seeing someone on the side. that was a wandering eye joke. Okay,
I like it. I got it.
It'd be cool if Kira gave Lando the deets on like Jabba's palace, like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like. Yeah. There'd be something so poetic about her being like, I know you're frozen for now, but I'm going to get you out just like you've been trying to get me. Like, there's some star-crossed romance there that can be capitalized on.
Oh, wait, no, you know what? So she knew he was captured before he got to Jabba's palace. And she was trying to free him before, but then he did end up ultimately going to Jabba. So she knows he's there. I'm sorry.
Right. But to me, it would be cool if... I don't know.
She had that.
Like, Lando finds out from her. Like, how do we know that Lando knows that he went there? Like,
yeah.
I forget if that's explicitly.
I might
cover a lot of that stuff. I don't want to say it didn't, because they did everything you could do with those characters, like too much almost. Yeah. Like I would argue that those characters, like, you know, our main three and you know, the entire ensemble of Rebels kind of do a lot, essentially, like in those stories.
By the way, Ben, you should contact PlayStation or Ubisoft and see if you can get a finder's fee, because you just sold yourself a copy of the Ultimate Edition.
Yeah, just sold two.
Yeah.
Like I, but I mean literally. While we were talking, I just hit
break for an ad right now. Let's break right now for an ad.
Yeah, we'll just play the trailer. yeah,
but just one of us playing the trailer.
Yeah. Yeah. So, anyways, that's what we got, man. And then, I mean, if we're looking down the pipeline, Skeleton Crew still on their wiki page says 2024.
So what is going on with Skeleton Crew? How long has this project been in post at this point?
I don't know.
Yeah, I thought it finished up before Acolyte finished up, which is odd to me that it's taken so long. Yeah.
I think, I mean, I'm hoping we get an announcement at, you know, on May the 4th. We get, like, that's the thing. They do one more. Like, they're rolling these out, like, every week. There's, like, a new thing. They're like, oh, and this is going to happen, and this is going to happen, this is going to happen. And, you know, maybe they'll wait until May the 4th now, because they have so much on our radar. And then
you ever feel like Kathy just side-eyes Favreau and sometimes, and she's just like,
you can't have everything?
This is too much.
You have to, we have to have other things.
No, all right. Because I'm just like,
I'm just thinking
Andor comes out, it's a masterpiece, and like you're gonna release the floodgates on like a bunch more shows right now, and it's like Leslie Edlund is incredible, and I believe wholeheartedly in the Acolyte and Skeleton Crew. I've loved Mando, but I think we can all agree that like sort of the Mando sort of regurgitates plot sometimes and feels a little like serialized sci-fi.
But he just,
you know, and
is not deep storytelling.
No,
I didn't say it. You said
no, but it's good. But it's hitting the hero of it's hitting Star Wars.
Yeah, it's the bedrock which like allows us to have.
That's the perfect way to say it. Yeah,
yeah,
yep. We need it. It's very important,
and I'm glad we have it. Frankly, I mean,
me too.
You know, we've been asking for this before it came out. We were just like, just give us the like. You know,
it's
Kurosawa samurai
of style of Star Wars that we all fell in love
with. It walks so others can run. And and what I'll say is that like part of me wonders if like
but we've achieved Andor, like we've achieved we've like split the atom essentially.
Yeah.
Like,
it's very true.
We did it.
Dude, I got no complaints about Mandalorian. It is what it is, but like I want I want the quiet, you know, on the range like gunslinger doing his job. And like on my rewatch, like really seasons one and two really had that Kurosawa vibe, that like you know, dusty like wandering swordsman vibe
week to week.
And,
it did.
Season three it like got a little
really
season three got a little like very much in, you know, the narrative and telling the story.
It's very narrative focused. It felt different. It, honestly, it just added an S to the name of the series. That's all it did. It was the Mandalorians, and which is like it's a different story and it's good, but it's it very different vibes.
Yeah.
But you also got to think where the audience is, right? Like they're about to release the Acolyte. When do you drop a Goonies? You don't drop it near a more serious project like the Acolyte. You put it somewhere else.
Oh, I thought you do because he's like you go from a dark thing to like a happy fun thing.
Right. Well, it's the recovery from a dark thing.
So there's a couple things to consider. One. They're moving more towards Iger's pushing more towards movies again. So we're going to see less shows, not no shows, but less shows.
True.
Then we have the impact of the strike, which is going to impact the release dates of things.
Yeah.
So now they have to put stuff on a slow drip. So the way I'm thinking about it is they had an option of like, what are we releasing in the summer? And what are we releasing at the end of the year? Knowing that the summer is kind of the big ticket item time. And so that makes me really, really hopeful for the Acolyte that they are so believing in the impact of that they just decide to jump production order basically and push back. And that's not to say anything bad about Skeleton Crew, but just that I think they really, all the internal buzz seems to be really high on the Acolyte. So I'm very excited by that.
And so, you know, we do have Andor season two that was scheduled for August 2024, but has been announced to be pushed to 2025.
It's going
to
be summer 25. That's going to be June. That's going to be the June 4th, 2025 show is my guess. Yeah.
That's going to be a big deal when it happens.
And Ahsoka's season two is going to be December of is going to be Christmas time of 25, and Skeleton Crew is going to. We're going to get. I think we're going to down to 2 live actions a year for a while. Would be my guess.
I'd be happy with that. I'd be happy with that.
As long as you keep giving us the animated and other stuff in between.
Yeah. I mean, I saw someone do a meme of like, it was like an infographic of all the headlines of all the different tales of. And it's like Tales of Maz Kanata's castle, Tales of, and like they went through like the Skywalker lineage and just did, they like there was 30 on there. I probably should have sent it to
you guys,
but like obviously Tales of the Sith, and like you could, and like you could do the Tales of for like a million things.
Absolutely.
If you know, if that's how they want to keep it going. I'd like to see them break into the Sith rule, or like the, you know, the hyperspace wars, or it's like go into a different time era and like let them play.
Well, I also enjoy the restraint too, right? It's like this is the meat and potatoes of Star Wars, essentially. Like this is your main source for villainy in all of narrative in Star Wars. Like take some time to figure that out. Yeah. And you know, I enjoy that they haven't just gone throttled up on the Sith. And they're really trying to find the right approach for that. And I hope the Acolyte is this first foray, these first steps into a larger world of sort of exploration of the dark past in the galaxy. And there's stuff in this book, the Defy the Storm, that I can't wait to talk to you guys about. That alludes to all of this stuff. So very cool.
All right. Well, let's carry on then. Do you mind if we do Defy the Storm last? Is that okay? And we'll cover, like, because Bad Batch should be quick, I think.
I don't have a lot to say for Bad Batch.
So. Will be very quick.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
this is Bad Batch episode 12, Juggernaut. Named after the vehicle Juggernaut.
Will not do my Juggernaut impression like last episode. I know.
Is this Juggernaut?
We took it off.
I know we did. Here's my impression of this episode. Oh, episode over. Sorry. I get real harsh. Boy, do I hate when they do this in TV where it's just like, oh, we got 4 episodes left? Let's burn an episode because we got 4 left. Sorry.
Can I just say one thing real quick?
Yes.
Like,
someone be positive, please.
Doing this. We do this every time we review an episode.
But I have to jump in here
and discuss the ending of the episode because I feel like, it would have been more. If like Hemlock like just shut the door and like almost left and shut the door and wasn't there, but he's trying to build this trust with Omega. Yeah. Like at the end, then we like it kind of feels like a redundant that we're back in this room with the kids again. And I was just like,
yep.
I don't know. The episode was like, we just did this. We know this is here. Yeah. You almost just need to see her past the laser field, and then you can kind of end the episode and like maybe show some character moment with him where he's like, and I'm cold. I'm a cold-hearted person, and shuts the door. You know what I mean? Like something that was just a little bit less. Like,
I agree. We spent so much time establishing the horrors of the kids to then like build it out. Be like, yeah, we know. Like it was a weird moment. Like, what am I supposed to be feeling emotionally other than the same thing I felt last time?
You expect them to go to a different room and show her something different.
I really did.
You've been watching the season this far. Yeah. You're like, oh, take us to the room with the weird pod and the Shadow Trooper and show us its tech. You know what I mean? Do something that's just like, and this is your friend. Boom! Like, empire us or something. Like, I don't know. Do something that's just different from what we saw. And then, so then when it ends like that, I was just like, this was a tough ending.
It was entertaining. It was an entertaining episode. It was fine. But it just seems weird to be like 4 episodes out and to be like, oh, by the way, we could have got, okay. It also makes me angry.
Remember all that stuff you just saw?
You should have, they should have spaced. Oh, they need to space Crosshair. I am now done with Crosshair after all this. I was so done. Space them. Because here's the thing, like narratively, this is one of the things that drives me nuts sometimes. I'm just like, oh, so we spent the last 12 episodes not getting to Tantus because you just didn't want to talk about Tantus. Great.
Extremely tough when your friend constantly mentions, I was still part of the Empire then. And it's just like, bro, you really need to go through some therapy and sort of, you know, understand that you can't have that just built into your persona.
Yeah.
That is sort of your excuse for certain actions that you take.
Well, he's on this journey. We're on this journey with poor Crosshair. He has severe PTSD.
I was part of the Empire.
Interesting call making fun of him for that, Adam, but okay. And then, you know, like, you know, he's got to work through some stuff and he's having trouble.
He's like, remember when I called you like 17 times, you didn't return my call? He was like, I was part of the empire.
Yeah. Remember, when you were trying to do all this time to build up trust with us and like become part of the gang and like be one of us again, you know, it would help not lying to us and telling us exactly what we've been asking for 14 episodes. Yeah,
listen, it's a last resort. It's a last resort. He doesn't want to deal with that guy.
He did it for Omega.
Yeah. And he did it, which is important. That's the real thing. Listen,
it's great.
Crosshair is the victim here.
Crosshair is greatest like few minutes of podcasting ever. It's like
Crosshair's the victim here, man.
He's like a pillar.
I'm not gonna kick
straight
the
up killer
down.
Heart of gold when he sits with Omega.
Yep.
And
yep.
They have their piece of time.
I think Crosshair's shot is getting better. I know you said he missed in the last podcast for episode 11, but really it was like he was waylaid by getting attacked when he was trying to take the shot. And so it's like,
I don't think it was circumstances,
but his shot was pretty sharp when he was taking out those stormtroopers. And then he was dead on with his shot for the tracker, but it flew away before it could hit. So
yeah, there's nothing he could have done in that case. Absolutely.
You know, what'd be genius if this show,
so I'm saying he's getting better,
subverts who has the force in the group and it's not Omega. It's like Crosshair. So, like, you know what I mean? Like, that would really show that the force is just like, it's elusive. You really don't understand it. It's very mysterious. You know what I mean? The way.
Yeah.
Like, to me, that would be so interesting.
So I'm glad you brought that up, Grant. And actually, I'm going to just take a little second here. So last week, I missed the podcast. Well, in part because I went to a Primus Perfect Circle Pucifer show. Okay.
You had to.
So I thought I was going to get like a set from each, but what it was Maynard James Keenan's 60th birthday party.
Oh, geez.
So Maynard James Keenan is the lead singer of Tool, also the lead singer of Perfect Circle, and the lead singer of Pucifer. That's like his like local band in Arizona is Pucifer. And usually Herb Alexander would play drums, but actually they have a different drummer now and he's amazing. Anyways, so what they did is they set up like a living room next to three drum sets, like on either side of three drum sets, and then like had a lower tier. And they just like Primus played three songs, Pucifer played three songs, Perfect Circle played three songs, Primus played three songs, Perfect Circle played three songs. And then like there was people out playing like ping pong and stuff. Anyways, I was overserved that night and I came home that Wednesday and I was like
trying to like streak on past that. Yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, cool. Yeah. I'm like, hey, let's watch. There's a double episode of Bad Badge waiting for me. I'm like, this is going to be fun. And then it's like, bam, bam, bam. And it's just like killing parents in front of children. And like, and I was like,
it is rough.
Oh,
yeah.
So I had to rewatch the episodes because I like,
what did the Shadow Trooper say at one point? It was just terrifying. He was like, we haven't even done anything yet. And I was just like, oh my, this is decoded fascism. Yeah. That truly just terrifies the soul.
Yeah. And there's some wild stuff in there, but I do kind of like, so mm-hmm. back to the point, original point, Hunter, he's just walking around on Pabu and the, you know, Shadow Trooper stealths into a cavern and he's like, I sense something. Like, isn't that the Force? Like, what is?
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if someone in this group is secretly like maybe the Force sensitive of the story.
Or are they all? And that also makes them like Bad Batches. That's what they were actually trying to do with these.
Or no one's Force genetic. I asked today about it, and he was like, he's telling me he's convinced Omega's not Force sensitive.
Yeah, yeah, he's squarely on that.
He's convinced.
Yeah,
and I just don't know. He says it with such conviction that I'm just like, okay. I mean, I feel like everything is being boiled down.
She's not
showing her a Sabine-esque moment, you know, where pushing Ezra into the ship. Like, so they of late, like we have seen really latent sort of Force powers develop in a character.
I don't think it's going to happen. And this is why. So on that rewatch that I did today or yesterday, they explicitly say Omega's blood is a binder. It's a binder so that like there's no degradation of
why can't you yes and these things? Why is it just you hear information and that is that's the sole fact? Why fair. Can't you yes that's and
fair point.
What you're talking?
It's a fair point. You totally can. And it could be
I don't understand that in fandom. This happens all the time where it's just like, but they said this explicitly. And I'm like, did you see the episode of the Savage Ventress and like see the subtext in that ending and sort of like analyze it more ways than one? Because like in that moment I was like, is Asajj Ventress totally know she's force sensitive and just needs time to develop it with her? Like it seems that's the
principle introduced in Ahsoka. And I mean, it's like if you have a midichlorian count, technically it can be, you know, if it's taught and worked on, you can use it. So by that logic, right. Yes, like there are midichlorians within, I think, with like I don't know what her M count is, but
the Force works in mysterious ways, though. Too, we can't just put it past that the Force is someone just uses the Force. It's not about that. It's about the time of need, your path, what you're sort of involved with, what you're who you're emotionally involved with, what's going on in the moment. That's sort of what the Force acts on.
That's my definition of the Force. Based on what they're telling us, here's my interpretation of what's going on here, is that they basically can't replicate M counts, right? Meaning that if you clone someone, you can't get the same M count, midichlorian count from this thing. It's degradation. She's a binder. And I think what they're doing very, very straightforwardly with these things is they're testing all of these clones. They're taking a sample of their blood, a sample of high M count blood, and putting them together and see if the M counts don't degradate. And so Omega is the first one where you combine her blood with the blood of a Force user, and there's the same midichlorian. So here's some She-Hulk thought for you. What happens if Omega gets a blood transfer from a Force sensitive? She then has midichlorians in her system that are bound to her blood. So my point is, she's not Force sensitive yet.
But she can be. You think she can be augmented?
For me, I don't think you can. I don't think you can splice someone's genetic into a living person, though. You have to basically do it at the embryonic.
You're not splicing. It's just that the M's, the midichlorians survive in Omega's blood instead of degradating, which is how you get to creating a Snoke or how you get to create a cloning.
Because again, right? Snoke is someone who lifts Rey like off her feet, uses electricity.
He has the Force and he's a clone.
Power, you know, going through it.
Yes.
But it's
because the blood sample of the Emperor is being combined with Omega's blood to remain so that the midichlorians don't degradate. Is my theory based on what they're saying.
So in essence, you're saying you could just give her midichlorians via blood transfusion and then those things, they'll live on in her blood.
It's what they're doing, I think, in that, because they're combining two samples and then they're getting a ping of green.
That's dark science Adam. It's a lot of
dark
science.
This is
going
to end like Jurassic Park in the Barbasol can. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah. this is
you might be right. Yeah. Yeah, and then like three sequels down the line, they find the Barbasol clan and make a Snoke.
Yeah, I'm wondering about that.
Pershing, make a Snoke.
Yeah, like what if they, like it's, this sounds like they need a lot of her blood to be able to make all those Snokes and do all those things. Oh, thank you so much.
Yeah, there's lots of Snokes.
Yeah, they're gonna juice her. No, I'm just kidding.
Rad. Yeah, I mean, I want more.
But Omega's gonna escape. Get out of there.
Unless she's not. What if she never escapes and they're like, that's how they make all the clones and she grows old in captivity?
I mean, I will say, it's a cartoon.
Yeah, kids show. Yeah. They wouldn't do that to us.
Happy ending for Omega.
Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah.
You got to see her, you know, Hunter and her like hug and be like, my dad's.
Yeah. Also, we're supposed to feel something that Rampart's back. Does anyone care? Does anyone feel anything about Rampart's back?
He's just a character.
Rampart's back
and bearded Rampart.
Oh, good. I'm glad someone does.
I was like, first of all, obviously horrible character, horrible person.
Yeah, it's always fun.
Like, well done in terms of like the dramatic tension and just how conniving he is, and just he's so slimy. He's such a fun character. Hemlock to me lost points because Rampart was so good in this episode. I was like, Hemlock who?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. He's so slimy. I mean, you know, I know this did seem like a detour, but it was like they needed to go, like, they're at like all hope is lost point right now. And they needed like to get a dub and get another inch closer to Tantus. And they're really playing up how hidden it is. And it's like, that was what this served. You know, but you got to infiltrate a prison. That's always fun. You know, Juggernaut chase. That was good times. You know,
running out of room. That was very Wile E. Coyote. The whole cliffside. Like,
yeah. But like, were you not?
But awesome. Like, oh, so cool. Just the blocking of all that was very cool. The action blocking.
Yeah.
Seeing the turrets actually firing on the top of the Juggernaut. Yes. I was like, you never really see Juggernauts in action, essentially. Yeah. Like, except for the Battle of Kashyyyk, but like. I really thought this was
the like
stuff.
Side missile like bays.
Oh, so
those are so cool. It felt like just like Clone Wars. It was like, you know, when they're firing out, you're like, oh
yeah, they do fire a bunch of a barrage missiles. Of missiles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was really fun.
It's a great episode. I again,
that's what I wanted when I got back from that show. Was
right a level of animation here with Bad Batch that's just just sumptuous. Sumptuous is the word. Like, we all hail from being like Clone Wars fans and then Rebels fans, and then, you know, Resistance looked really flashy and cool. That animation was very neat. And then they've now returned to this 3D format, and it's gorgeous. Yeah. Like, it's just so beautiful. Like, the lighting, the designs, it's everything. All the sound, if you wear your AirPods or you wear nice headphones and you listen to this show, you're going to be blown away with just how powerful, you know, the soundtrack is, essentially.
Yeah, I blasted the volume when I would rewatch these, because I'm like, you kind of have to. And it's like, that's sort of where it is. It's just like that the dialogue does sit above. But like, if you actually get the soundtrack up to where you can feel the soundtrack, the dialogue's not too loud. It's just very clear.
I can tell you, I'm going to return to that Fennec Shand episode like a few times each year. Like, that episode was just fire.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's do it. Well, so should we defy the storm, guys?
We got to get out of this. You've got to get out of this occlusion zone. We got to figure out a way out. We need someone who understands like fractal crystal science and you know, crystal theory, hyperspace theory.
Who better than that than young genius Avon Sunvale, as she's known to not her friends, but Avon Staros, to those that actually are her mom, Gira Staros. Yeah.
Let me break out my notes. I have too many notes on this book that we'll talk about.
I have a million notes on this book too. I really enjoyed it. I'm like missing out. We haven't done the comics in a while, and I'm like, was just sort of looking at, I miss adventures. Like, I want to read adventures. And in the regular series, we haven't done the comics in a bit. And like, these are big things that happen in the comics. And I'm just like feeling like that's missing from my life. Cause that's like half the story is what's happening in adventures in the Marvel series. So
I'm losing my urge to be a completionist with High Republic stuff, but I do like reading those comics. So I can't wait to do that.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. And then, so we're also going to like, there's Escape from Valo. I think what we're going to do is we're going to have Adam tell us like a bedtime story about that. That's kind of my hope, like how it goes. I started reading it, but yeah.
Oh, goodness. Full disclosure, to get through it, I was running low on time. So while driving through horrible traffic today on my way home, I listened to it 3x speed, which is not good for mental health. So I got like 48% of it down.
You know, part of the ad. And yeah, then, you know, it's just
I was like, I'm following. Stop tailgating me. I'm following. I got it. I feel slightly off kilter, but it was
but the loader roots. Oh, you guys, the loader roots, the loader roots are using hot mating rituals. The hot mating rituals. It's like,
No shade to Daniel Jose Otter or Alyssa Wong. It sounded like it was very well written, but I had to listen to it very quickly to get it done before tonight.
And I do want to know what's up. Like, Ram Jamaran.
Three.
Is a fun
character. That's actually inhuman.
Ram Jamaran. Three times. Like, it's like 16 and a man in this thing. Like,
pretends to be a Sith.
Ben, what are your thoughts?
Anyways, let's start with Defy the Storm, because there's a lot of meat on this bone. Yeah. So this is like ladies' night again. We got, you know, essentially they break up into three teams, but you've got Silvestri Yarrow and her girlfriend Jordana Sparkburn. Yeah. So they, you know, and
one of my favorite characters,
right? And they're piloting the Vengeful Goddess.
The Vengeful Goddess.
Yeah.
So we need the ship encyclopedia for the High Republic soon.
Right.
Hopefully,
that's
right.
It's going to come out.
Yeah, and because the designs are fantastic.
There's so many cool ships in this too, like the Brightbird and there's so many cool ideas.
And that was I guess gifted to them, and I forget which story I saw this in, because I know I saw this by Xylan Graf. I think it was like in one of the novels. He bequeathed that to them. Yeah. And
I'm kind of partial to Xylan Graf. I think that's a fun character.
So Xylan Graf chapters were my favorite.
Yeah, they're like, for me, those were the best reads.
Yeah,
I was like, oh, this guy is, he's like Oppenheimer but swaggy.
Swaggenheimer.
Let's go. Like, this is he's just everything that Oppenheimer is, but just like with swag and style. And like,
is that our title? Xylan Graf is Swaggenheimer.
Episode title achieved.
Yeah,
there you go.
Because like, yeah, dude, I loved it, and I just, because it's like, it's always like, oh, we're so serious, and this has got to be done, and our emotions and our feelings, and he is just like this foppish dandy that just like is like only so privileged, but his life is so dangerous, and he just sort of sashays through his life and like all these things, and it reads beautifully. It's such a great tonal shift. It's so funny. Yeah. And like just so swaggy. He's just like so swaggy and like does his thing. And I looked at that today. Adam just showed in the character encyclopedia what Xylan Graf looks like, and beautiful Hispanic man
or something.
Yeah.
Well, that was awesome.
And just like, you know, done up and
just very foppish.
He and his husband, those are like really the only two male characters in it. Diva Lompop, A-plus character.
Oh my goodness.
And this is,
can we talk about this first?
She's 1,000 years old.
I love, like, by the
So she alludes to that, and she alludes to, we talked about the Sith earlier, and she does talk about being like older, or my people are older than you, and we've seen a great many things far worse than what's going on now.
Yes.
Which is like, I mean, even I guess Palpatine's takeover of the galaxy is far worse than the Nihil as well. But it's just like, it seems like she's basically prodding around at like the sort of the canonical past of great wars of the Jedi and the Sith, but also that she's seen the Jedi do things that would make Vernestra Roe, Vernestra Roe, renounce her vows.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Big time.
Yeah,
tantalizing stuff, guys.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Tell me more, please.
It's an institution. Turns out there's some cracks under there. The foundation. There's
literal cracks in the foundation, because they're built on a Sith.
Yeah. Skeletons in the closet.
Some bodies.
Yeah. Bodies. And I just also love that by the end of this book, we've completely normalized the fact that she eats people.
Yeah.
That's one of my favorite things. Yeah, it's like, yeah, you like,
smell
just accept
people
it
throughout the book. Like, show, yeah, you just like smell like that. Like, like she sees people like prey, essentially. She's such a cool character.
Yeah.
But it's a great character who's shown up in the comics throughout, and even up now into current era comics. I can't remember what comic we saw her in, but there was
Bounty Hunters.
Was it War of the Bounty Hunters? War of the Bounty Hunters.
I want to give credit to Sewell, but it might not, because I know she was definitely in Bounty Hunters a lot. Like, that was kind of her thing. I remember she just sprang up in the middle of Bounty Hunters, and it was like, oh, that character is cool. And then, War of the Bounty Hunters, I think, that's where she came in. So, it's not Ethan Sachs.
What was cool about her is she was actually in both eras.
It would be Sachs
comics.
If it was,
like, she tied the comics together in a cool way, where I think she's like High Republic main run or something. Yeah. And then, what did Justin Ireland write in the comic? Or maybe it was like a standalone. It was a one-off in the comics or something. But I want to say there was a High Republic comic and a War of the Bounty Hunters comic where it connected her through the decade.
Yeah,
the
that could be. I can't remember.
That sounds right.
I can't place her in High Republic.
But what's cool about this book, though, is we get the first canonical sort of use of the Shawnee language.
Yeah.
The Shawnee language, yes, basically. There we go. Which is, it's now a new language in Star Wars, which I love when Star Wars sort of like has these mainstay languages like Huttese and, you know, Shriwook and like things that were like the, like I love when they develop it just enough that it's a mainstay thing. And it's cool that this is, hopefully maybe we get more of this. Yeah. Maybe it gets developed elsewhere in this, the storytelling. Yeah. I thought that was very cool.
That was very cool. I want, Grant, I want to give you a lot of credit here. So Diva Lompop first appearance was in the Jabba the Hutt War of the Bounty Hunter standalone. They had those standalone episodes and she was in all of the standalones, yes, that the connected standalone them.
One-offs, yeah.
But introduced and written by Justina Ireland, Jabba the Hutt. So well done, Grant. Justina Ireland introduced that character. Oh, wow. Cool. Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah, I mean, she's epic character, you know, commands, you know, all your attention whenever she's there because she's going to do some crazy things. And I love that they made her a Nihil where it's just like, she's like, yeah, I'm just trying to survive here.
You're like, she looks like a Nihil. Yeah, like
she's a warrior. So it's like, well, that's like, okay. She's like, I can survive.
It's so true. But it also makes sense for someone who's that long lived of just like, I go with the flow. Like, I like just like, it's not like this. It's for someone who's that old. It's not a giant moralistic decision. She's like, this is a drop in the bucket. Right. The Nihil will have existed for 1/1000th of my entire life.
This will be fun.
This is where I am to survive now. Yeah. I will not even remember this at the end of my life. Like this is a minor bump.
Yeah. And you know, and we know by the time of the original trilogy, she's very, very, very rich. She doesn't appear that way now, but it's like, you know, at some point she's going to be like, maybe I should just be wealthy and just be wealthy for a while. And like, she takes contracts, but she does whatever, you know, she does. But so she's fantastic. Then Vernestra Rowe, don't call her Vern unless you're her friend. But she'll always be Vern to me.
Yeah. We'll talk about that. Never call her Vern.
Yeah. Oh, bro. That was such a good scene.
That is my favorite scene in the entire book.
Elzar Mann, a book full of great scenes. Called out, like,
we needed this. This is actually the sort of developments I thought would happen quite often in these books, but they just it happens sparingly, but very dramatic when it goes down. When there's sort of real housewives of the Jedi Temple happening, I was just like, this is what I'm here for.
It's like, Vern wanted smoke. She was like, I want to hear it from you, Elzar.
Yeah, but I think this is like a turning point for the series.
Below the Council of that character, whatever you call this. Yeah, I don't know what you call this show, but it just good.
Vern's elite, and you know, we knew it from her like very early beginnings, and you know, so we're going backwards again, but you know, she does like a sort of mission summarization to the council at the end, and like, you know, and at the very end she confronts Elzar Mann, but like in that council meeting, you know, she speaks true, she speaks from the heart, she's authentic, she's like, I left the order for a minute because I needed it, like, frankly, it was too much to bear and I needed to get my feet under me, and I did it, and so that I could be the best Jedi that I could be, and I came back and did it. And like, Yoda was like, that's what's up. Fist bump.
Yeah.
I mean,
I got you, girl. And then she's like, all right, I'm out. And I'm going to go confront Elzar Mann.
I mean, she's the youngest. She's like one of the youngest knights of all time, right? Like, that's one of her traits. And I feel like now she's going to be the youngest master of all time. Like, after that thing of like, bestow her the title of master, right? Like she is.
What happened with the master ceremony? Like, what is that?
I thought you became a master when you had a Padawan. Like, as soon as you take a Padawan, that makes you a master.
Oh,
I guess that's true. It's because that's a title. Yeah. It's not like a status. It's a status. Yeah.
So
not
technically,
a title,
she's a master at 17.
It's not a knighting ceremony. It's not like re-knighting happens or anything.
Okay. Right. But here's the thing I'll say too is that like in that the other thing she comes. Like she comes clean about is having her whip or having her lightsaber whip, right? Yeah. Which I thought for sure this was gonna end with her not having that. And now my question is, to which I already know what the answer is, but like we're seeing Vernestra Rowe in The Acolyte.
Do
we get to see a lightsaber whip?
But I'm worried about the whip because
I would love
like,
it.
Is it gonna be crazy?
Yes,
you know what I mean?
Yeah,
maybe they tried it. Maybe they tried it like this doesn't work, but like
I think that's gonna be like one of the like really powerful moments in the Acolyte is when she like busts out the whip, like she saves it.
Well, the whole thing is what if there's a lot more thought put into it where it's like when that does happen, it's not so much that it's the device doing it, it's like the Force almost like bending laser. You know what I mean? Like, to me, it'd be more interesting if it's that she kind of wills the force to bend the laser a little bit.
So I think it has to be that. I think you have to be totally in tune with your kyber crystal, like, to control, like, even, you know, a straight sword, you know? So it's like, you've got to be able to use the force to, like...
And if you're, like, doing something cool like Tai Chi and, like, doing that in all these different movements, and then, like, you draw your saber when you're kind of at the full extent of your arm and it launches, the like, the saber blade even longer, and, like, you can kind of, like, push the blade, like, by doing all the, like, classic sort of, like, movements, like...
That would be amazing.
Like, there's ways to do it that would be really cool, but there's ways to do it that could be really bad, is all I'm saying. Like, there's two ways to do it. There's, like, a way to do it that's, like... It just lashes out with a light whip and it's really intense. It's almost like Darth Maul coming at you with a flurry and light whips. But it's like, to me, that's too intense. I think there should be some thought.
Why shouldn't there be a Jedi that is OP? Like, that's just OP with, like, you know, I think when Vern enters the battlefield, she should ruin everyone. I mean, it happens in this book. Like, they were playing up to it. I was like, oh, this book felt very Marvels to me. But, like, you know, there was, like, a scene where at the end where it was, like, she could finally, you know, she'd been training for a year with her light whip to get her, like, all her attacks on point. And, like, but she wasn't let off the chain until she was on that planet at the end with Imri Kantaros helping them free them. And
the thing about her live action version is that, like, she looks sort of like, I don't know, there's sort of like a menace to her, like, I don't know, it just feels like she feels like a more serious Jedi the way I've just seen her walking around the trailers, at least. And I'm just like, she has to be the complete good character, because you can't make her, if she walks around with such a serious attitude, or, like, you don't see a lot in the trailer, but it's like, I imagine she's the good Jedi, and I imagine maybe Jedi that you're seeing that are, like, seem good are maybe the bad Jedi. You know, like, are the Jedi that might. And then who's to say the Jedi aren't taking out Jedi? You know what I mean? As well. Like, and Jedi can just get arrested. There's a lot, there's a lot of bandwidth you get with storytelling with Jedi, which is like, they're not Sith, that they're just a Jedi who went bad and, you know, like, then got exiled. Like, they don't, then Ki-Adi Mundi's statement stands true. You know, like, there's a, you have a lot of bandwidth to have Jedi v Jedi stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think Renesta Rho might be at the heart of that plot in that show. And I think this confronting of Elzar, man, I think she is earning these, like, bona fides at the Jedi that, like, no one basically, like, or basically, like, she's going to be well renowned as sort of like a true Jedi, true sort of balanced, you know, light side character that, like, is the truth, much like Yoda, like the truth of the Jedi sort of character.
Yeah, I think even like Obi-Wan, you know, in certain ways.
Yeah, Obi's definitely like this sort of, like, you know, I would say poster child of the Jedi, basically. And
yeah, I feel like she could be like Ro,
Yoda, like these, there's specific characters that are like this. Qui-Gon is kind of representative of, like, the outsider Jedi, Maverick. But maybe knows more about a certain aspect of the Force than the Jedi do, which is this sort of living Force, this attunement with nature, right? And, like, the natural world versus, like, the sciences of the Force and arcane study and stuff like
that. Well, so that's the third, you know, arm of the triple threat that is Vern Rho. Like, so she's a super Jedi, like, talented, has the base talent, right? Then her lightsaber technique, disrupting lightsaber technique, because she's elite. But then she's also super attuned with the cosmic force. And I'm probably saying that wrong. It's not the living force, it's the other force.
Yeah, the cosmic.
Is it cosmic? So, and this is in sorcery too. They're like, there's like two planes of existence. It's sort of like living, and then there's, like, you know, astral plane and that sort of stuff. And I think, like, that's what they're, like, going for here. And so that allows her to see Force Ghost Mari Santeca, which I thought was very cool. But, like, I mean, that's really cool. Like, the fact that she's just, like, you know, cosmically awesome, man, and, like, knows what's going on in, like, the universe. Like, I love that. I love that about her.
She's one of my favorite characters, I think, in the whole thing.
But the Mari Santeca Force Ghost thing was, like, so fun to me. I was like, oh, this is a nice little callback. It's like, maybe it's not quite, or Mary Mar, you know, if anyone could make themselves a Force Ghost, you know, on their own and just figure it out, it'd be Mari Santeca. So, you know, that's made millions of paths.
Well, it's also like, she's been in comatose for so long that it's like, it's almost like the idea that, like, and she's connected to the path technology and all that stuff.
She's lived in her mind.
Yeah, she's in her mind. She's almost like the Madam Web.
A lot of, okay.
It's like the Madam Web of Star Wars. I know, bad timing on that reference, but it's just.
I know, but like the good comic book character, not it was the a great other thing that happened.
She's still a great character and can be a great
character.
She is,
yes. Yeah.
We should mention that, like, really does the book does focus on the robber barons of hyperspace technology and transit and star, you know, hyperspace routes, who are the Graffs, the Santecas, and the Staros families. I think there's a couple other families mentioned in the other books too, which is, I really need to write them all down. But loved the Santeca stuff. I loved the Graff stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I this book is just filled with rich lore that I wasn't expecting all of this sort of fun lore in here about just the early stages of sort of hyperspace travel and how paths were sold, like basically like oil yards. It's like the oil fields, essentially. It was like these paths were the sort of the commodity, essentially, and these routes were sold, essentially. Yeah.
Was I didn't get a chance to Google it, but like it's on HBO with the like Western show that came out. It's like came out like 15 years ago. Deadwood. Yeah. Like Deadwood? So that that, like, I get Deadwood vibes off of the High Republic because it's sort of like you get that same dynamic,
like pioneer sort of story.
Yeah,
it's very pioneer.
Absolutely. And like you feel the, like, there's these barons and these like power brokers that are making things work with the expansion, and then you've got the sort of just the people on the ground and the outlaws, and like that's what the High Republic era feels
it
like.
Really entices us to go, entices me to want to go further back even, because I feel like I would love it if there's just a few hyperlanes and let's just like everything feels very wild and there's lots of discovery, like, you know, like to me that's like
I want
to go
frontier-y.
To an earlier stage of the galaxy just to have that sense of discovery. And then what's so fun about doing that in the canon is you can basically have the rediscovery of your Tatooine, the rediscovery of your, you know, I don't know, Hoth or what. You're like, you can basically do all these planets again that you've seen in the canon that will look totally different. But audiences would get a little tickle because they're like, oh my God. Like
you can do the Dune Arrakis.
You can see Tatooine covered in water. Like, Tatooine covered in water, you know, like.
Right. Yeah. Like, I think that is better than going back with Yoda, like I thought would be the best approach for Lucasfilm. But like going back to a Tatooine that has water, that is maybe the most poetic, most interesting choice. Yeah. Cause it's like, check it out. Like, this is how far back we are. What's this planet called? It's called Tatooine. Like someone just, you know, it's like,
I also like, you know, if this is the frontier era and it's only, you know, 300 to 100 years before, the Skywalker saga, like, we know there's like 24,000 years before that. Like, I hope that's all space for it to be a little more mystical, you know, like, cause what happens before a frontier? And like, we know there's still hyperspace travel and there's like eras of decadence and, you know, maybe there's rises and falls of like technology and like, you know, theocracies and like, but like mysticism and like, let's just, you know, and more fantasy. Like, it's almost like Wheel of Time, right, has played around a little bit with this where it's like, yeah, there were eras that were hyper technological, like our era. And then there's also like times that are, you know, very primitive and it's just like wizards and warlocks and stuff. And like, maybe they'll sort of work through that. But there's just a lot of fun space to play.
Yeah, it gets more anthropological too as you go back, right? And you're just like, oh, okay, like this is the origins of this, is the origins of that. And mystical.
Yeah. No, I love it. I had a critique that I was gonna save until the pod, and then I've been thinking about it. So I'll still share it with you and then kind of like walk it back a little bit because the issue is, I'm like, if we get to the end of this book and the occlusion zone is still the occlusion zone and no one's broken it, I'm going to be a little angry. The one thing I did realize, though, when I was looking at the release order is We're still only in the first books of
the third phase three.
Is the rollout slower in phase three than it was in phase one and two?
It took us longer to read this book. This book's been out a minute.
I guess that's true, right? It did take us a while to get caught up because it feels like it's been forever since we were introduced to the collusion zone, but it's really not because we still haven't even gotten. So I guess this
it's a long phase. It's a full year phase. And like some of the phases, I think phase two was only 6 months. Like,
And only two books in each level, and this is back to three books in each level. So I guess I'm okay with it. I'm just a little like already over
all
the
I'm
exclusion
saying
zone
is there's a book
bit.
Called Tears of the Nameless, and that title alone is just attention grabbing.
Oh, I mean, have you seen the cover of the next like novel, was it Temptations? I mean, come on, Temptation of the Force. And all it is Avar Chris and Elzar Mann on the cover. And
is it going to be a romance?
Yeah,
that sounds super accurate.
It better. And after this book, I'm thinking this book is the end of this book, not the very end. We'll talk about the very end, but the first epilogue where we get Vanessa Rowe, as we already talked about. That to me seems to be the inciting incident to Temptation of the Force. That better lead off with Elzar Mann dealing with this crisis of faith and having to confess his sins, and then
they read Rising Storm again or whichever book that was, because I feel like that book is so aggro. That book is super aggressive. It's just
I kind of forgot
getting crashed, and then just Jedi just going ham. I was wait. So this is the book. I think that's the book for me of all the books. That book wild.
Let me do a real quick escape from Valo tangent just to get it over with, because that's a good leeway. That entire book deals with the PTSD of the attack on Valo. Yeah. So he's basically stuck on Valo. Trying to have this insurrection against the Nihil that own it. And he finds these three or four wildling younglings
behind,
that were left in the forest behind. And what you start getting is it starts cutting back to their experience the attack on Valo, which is super heavy for a junior novel. Cause I just see where it talks about a kid observing another, one of their Padawans getting turned into dust, by a nameless, another one getting chopped in half. Jeez. It gets really these are traumatized children that Ram is trying to deal with. It's kind of I kind of love that part of it where I'm they're talking about the horrors witnessed by the children, the Jedi children.
Wow, that's serious. Yeah. And Grant, the one thing in this book that I did read enough of, one of Ram Jamaran's theories was he pretended to be a Sith to throw them off. That was his disguise, and he was the Red Skull, and it was he made a kyber lens that would make his yellow kyber crystal look red, and so he had a red lightsaber and he would wear this big bulky black
switch it on and off
and would be a Sith for a while and pretend to do that as his there's a scene that's with awesome. Another with a Jedi master that's still around, and he's just that's really cute that you think that these people know anything about history.
<He's> they're not going to know.
No one knows
what
a Sith is, man. And they even cut him off. Yeah. He's
especially Nihil. They're huffing pants.
Yeah, exactly.
They don't know what a Sith is.
We are nihilists. We believe in nothing, Lebowski. Yeah, that must be exhausting.
Wait, speaking of paint, can we talk about the painter assassin who works for Maz in this book? Who has poison pigments or something in her paint. I forget her name in the book, but that was so cool. I was that's such a smart idea. Of course, that's where you keep your poison.
In your paint.
I think it was earlier in the book. I forget what part it was.
Yeah.
I love that, though.
Maz gets name dropped a million times. They hang out at her castle.
A lot.
We see her, which is okay. But it's kind of fun when they're on Takodana, you can you can visualize where they are and what they're seeing based on what we've seen in the comics and the movies. So really pretty cool. But so we've got these groups here, Zylan Graf, and he's in Vernestra Rowe and Avon Staros are a team, and Diva Lompop, and you know, Sylvester Yarrow, and they're all trying to like figure out what happened to their people. Great Imri Kuntaros like section where like Imri's finally found himself. He's like, I just am gonna help people. That's what I'm about. And he's in the occlusion zone, but he's like, nope, I found my place. So much so that Renesra Rowe knights him. She's like, wow, this is not what I wanted for you, but like you're like, she can tell he has made that jump, and she's wise enough to be like, at, you know, 17, she must be.
Right. First, she meets that droid J6, which is my favorite.
PTSD droid.
My new favorite droid of all time. This is a droid that's just like sort of like building other droids to help with this revolution against the Nile. And I was like, more droids to help. Like, you know, the nameless one.
Why don't droids make droids?
And then, so I was just pumped about that. But like her lines are so good, J6, like where she's like, I know how I work. Like, you're rebuilding yourself, or you rebuild yourself with parts from these speeders or whatever. And she's like, I'm a droid. I know how I work. And I was like, I just love that line. I felt like everything was so quippy. Like, she's like, have you seen M6 or whatever? And she's like, I'm the only six here or whatever in this town or whatever. And I was just like, I loved that droid. I thought it was so well written. And I just really liked the droid moment there.
Yeah, I love J6. I really thought that like that was a droid having PTSD, like had sort of like been thrust into wartime. And
I thought it was like enough is enough with the fight. And then when Avon Staros or Avon Sunvale or whatever in earlier is like to Vernestra when she's going to kill Dr. McCampo, she's like, sometimes people deserve to die. And I was like,
so.
And if you tell that to a Jedi, was just like,
yeah.
That was the deepest moment in the book, I thought. I was like, oh, that is wild. Like, you know what? It's just a very interesting sort of perspective to then foist upon a Jedi to think about.
Right, because that's where we are. It's just like, just kill these people.
Yeah, but, yeah. Like, these people are evil.
End it. Like, the Macampa thing, it's like, it's very much back to, like, why didn't Obi-Wan kill Vader the two other times he had the chance? Like, the two times he had a chance to end that. Like Sith, he didn't, and it's like, well,
one I choose to forget, but
how many lives would you like saved if you'd killed him? And it's like, he's like, no, Jedi don't kill, like, we don't do that, we maim, like, what, you know, we'll incapacitate people that are threatening others, but it's like, there's not enough of that.
But if Obi-Wan kills Darth Vader, does the Emperor just find another lackey and does continue his rule of the galaxy, and it's just Vader's fate to kill the Emperor? And did Obi-Wan right decision in the ways of the Force? Mm-hmm. The Force works in mysterious ways. Like, there's so much that I think is left to interpretation of Star Wars.
But we do know the crux of the whole like High Republic is the one time that a Jedi was like, enough is enough, like, I'm gonna kill this person. He killed the wrong person that happened to be trying to save Starlight Beacon, and Starlight Beacon fell.
Oh, Chance of Yara. And Elzar. It's Elzar's
fault that Starlight Beacon was destroyed. Because he gave in.
Lightsabered first and asked questions. Because
he gave in to his hate. And he did that. And like, I feel like that is the biggest like validation of Obi-Wan not killing Vader of anything. It's just sort of like, you just don't know. You just don't kill. You don't make that decision because you're like, it doesn't matter how much power you have, it's not enough to make that decision.
What we're getting in phase three is a lot of dark side talk, right? With like Elzar Mann, we get Aslan Rael, which we'll talk about more. And even in the Escape from Valo book, there's one of the younglings, Driggett Parse is a person who's not force sensitive, or doesn't appear to be at least, but is close and was working with the Jedi, and basically had to swear fealty to the Nihil to survive, and kind of just felt abandoned by the Jedi. And the end of that book is not her coming back to like, yes, is her literally sitting on a spaceship meditating on her anger, doing a Sith
like enhancing her anger.
Like, I'm letting go of everything but my anger, which is just like a really, again, this is the young, it's the young readers. So, but like, it's an ending of just like, oh, this is a dark side ending. Like, these endings, all these books,
that's not where I thought that character was going to go. Like, they were so like hitting you over the head with like, yeah, man, she's really working for the good guys this whole time.
There is one thing that can really like set, like really blow me away if these books go there, which is that like, there's so much. If indeed we are going to the darkest, dark heart of the galaxy and exploring the Sith by the end of these books, I think the one thing that would truly blow me away is if like whatever Sith is on the scene or whatever actualized Sith we see at any point just can like control the Nameless or something. Like, it's just like all this build up to them being terrifying, all this build up to the Nile being terrifying. It's like the Sith is like, oh no, this thing, like, I can actually control it.
Well, yeah,
like
there are,
you know what I mean? Like, that's like the fear, right? Yeah. Like, we'll talk about Aslan.
We need a bigger bad.
Fear means.
Yeah, and they're hinting that like maybe dark side users aren't as affected as badly as light side users by the Nameless. And I mean, Aslan Rael is kind of responsible for that, so I wonder if maybe that's the way it goes. But I think like still they're Force Eaters, like. I don't know.
Yeah, because what if something dampens the light a few hundred years before the prequels? So it's like, it makes sense that everything's clouded is because there's been a dampening that's been happening.
Right. You know? Or it makes sense to me that like the Sith can be watching what's happening in the galaxy right now, and they're like, and they can see the Jedi brought to their knees and then are like, we can do this. We can take over the galaxy. And like, now is the time. Like, this is it. They're fallible.
Yeah. There has to be a now's the time sort of thing, right? Where it's like, we're now entering a paradigm where the Sith, they're going to, you know, shoot their shot.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, we'll see what happens.
Yeah. It could be.
I love that take. Yeah. I hadn't really thought about that. This is like the first, this is just, they like, it's almost like a line. I can't remember what it's from. But it's like, oh, they bleed.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? This moment of like seeing that the Jedi.
Not just quote Batman v Superman right now.
Oh no! Did I? Oh nice. No! Okay, I mean, there's some okay stuff in that all time of night. Stuff, but like
it's that time of the night.
Oh man! All right, bye everyone. I quit. No, but but I will say that is a good. But that's a good line, right? Like of being able to see this, like, oh, you bleed, right? Like that's a moment of just like the Sith seeing. Yes, there are weaknesses there. There are cracks in the foundation that we can start manipulating.
I will say, I love that. When we're on Jordana's or planet, Sparkburn's like home planet, couple of Bith there. Couple of Bith in the scene. Just saying, hanging out with Harth, her brother.
Brackley. Yeah, that's right.
I'm just saying, you know, there's some Bith in the galaxy right now, and maybe they're dark side users. I don't know.
A Sith Bith would be just purest Star Wars.
Yeah.
And so, like,
yeah.
But to not do a Sith Bith is totally understandable. Like, I just understand not doing it. I almost understand not doing it more than trying to be true to the legends true to
tales. Yeah.
But don't you think the nerds want to take on that challenge and be like, I can make a Sith Bith metal.
I think a Sith species is way more commercially viable because then you can tie into sort of bloodline commentary and it can be an inverted Skywalker sort of take.
Yeah.
How about bloodlines in the darkest sort of like, you know, evolutions of power, right? Where it's just like, as we accrued more wealth and power and, you know, force power and we kept it to ourselves and we were cruel to others who didn't share our last name or part of our faction, essentially, and being exclusive, like showing how families and bloodlines can be truly evil, essentially, is kind of, and then that bolsters the whole democratization of the Force and sort of like the sort of themes that people loved in The Last Jedi.
Yeah, no, I love that because it opens up so much. It makes the galaxy so much bigger.
It's so much easier to do that. Yeah. A Sith Bith is just...
Oh, I love it.
It's just for us, we'd be fanning out. We would basically be like just reveling. We would have the time of our life. But I don't know.
But it doesn't move the narrative forward much.
Still, I just think it gives credence to the Plagueis novel. That was so good.
I think you keep Plagueis though.
That's the thing.
And I think you have to like do something big and bold with Plagueis sooner or later because you just kind of have
to
canonize what there is to canonize about the character so people stop just theory crafting and going crazy over you know, how maybe his story interacts with Vader and Palpatine's story, and how he is a puzzle piece to all of that. And I think you just have to just put your stamp on it as Lucasfilm and then move on. But like, it can be very mysterious. I don't really think that character needs to be explored fully in any major way. It's just
my point is just like James Luceno nailed it. Like, he just nailed that book so hard. And it's like, if he says Tenebris exists, mm-hmm. I think Tenebris should exist. And they can write around him as much as they want, but like, that
the Tenebris,
so
like Plagueis stuff is so good too. Like, just the drama there is so good.
Yeah.
And the way they interact. Yeah. And please go read that book if you're a fan of Star Wars, because I feel like just the sort of two Darksiders, you know, playing mental games, like, are you kidding
talking
me?
About
like,
the history
I,
of
it's
the
almost
Senate.
What I wanted to see. It's almost like what I want out of new Star Wars, essentially, is. I want the wise characters talking to each other. I've said this since the inception of our podcast. I'm like, I just don't think the wise characters interact enough in Star Wars, and you almost want to see those mind games. And you like that. That's almost what I would like to see in new Star Wars. Essentially, is the battle of the brightest, essentially, and what that looks like in terms of Sith and Sith v Jedi. Like, you know, I want to see that. You know,
right?
Yoda, like Lucas goes there in Revenge of the Sith. It's tough because it's very abrupt and there's a lot happening, you know, in terms of the usurping of the galaxy, but it's like, and lots of action having to take place quickly, but it's like, you get Yoda v. Palpatine, you get these big, like wise characters confronting each other. And I'm just like, you know what, like more of that, but I feel like you can do so much more than like My Little Green Friend. You know what I mean? Like, you can do so much more with that dynamic, essentially.
Yeah. You're right, man. And, you know, I think if we all had one criticism of the High Republic is that it's moving too slowly. And you know,
it's like the Elzar scene could have happened earlier.
Yeah.
Like, I wouldn't mind if you kind of make sure that in each book going forward, like there's that development with the Elzar, Stellan, Avar characters, and major developments with them. And sort of, I really thought that they were going to have a fun, like, I do not love friend triangle sort of like thing that is woven into all the stories and almost like major beats and all the stories almost like talked about this Shakespearean connection between those three characters and maybe those three characters. Yeah. I don't know. I just thought it's interesting how they just kind of pop in and pop out of the story. And I don't know. It's kind of weird to me. I don't know. I don't really get it.
I'm tempted when this is all done, depending on how it lands, is to just read the six novels back to back and just see if it's like you get more of that without, and not to say, because I think, as I've always talked about, I think they're all really well written, but you're kind of jumping between, they're sharing with each other, but just to see like the Elzar, like just see the triumvirate, that story just told in six novels.
We're always trying to see the big picture, but it's like this series that's coming out over the course of 3 years, 4 years, like it's tough to really get the overarching view as you're hopping around between different groups of characters, you know, 6 months apart.
I mean, we should have Meg on lots of things, but I think when this whole thing wraps up, we should get Meg back on and have her because she is such a
she'll have like an encyclopedic knowledge.
I get her perspective on like the main adult narrative run and how that feels for her. I mean, she does the book review stuff, so
Meg,
she might have she has a better eye at it.
Star Wars book review.
Again, I'm probably miscalculating what the adult novels do when you read them in a row, because probably
I did read
a lot of the young readers in between, and I know those are branching stories, but it just feels like maybe Eye of Darkness was a lot of like Avar or something, and then like another book's a lot of like Elzar, like, you know, Rising Star. Like
a lot of Elzar.
It's just like certain books are their books. Like, you know, it's, and I guess that's modeled after sort of saga storytelling, but, I guess.
That's what I loved about this is because like when, you know, like Rising Storm, we get like Elzar's point of view and you're like, okay, you know, this guy's trying his best. But like Vernestra Rowe in this book dresses him down. She's like, she's like, you're not only should you not be a master, like you really shouldn't be a Jedi, like you're not, and I think the critique was something along the lines of like, you're not doing the right thing because it's the right thing, you're doing the right thing because other people think you want other people to think you're doing the right thing, like
you're doing the right thing. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
you're
and I mean,
other people's opinions.
I've talked
of you.
To professionals that say it doesn't. As long as you're doing the right thing, that's all that matters. But that's neither here nor there. Like Elzar, she's just sort of like, no, you're coming at this all wrong. You're like your moral center is off.
Well, isn't he in love with Avar?
That's the problem.
Like that?
Yeah,
and like not allowed that.
He's obsessed with being Stellan, but like not for the but he's not embracing what Stellan stood for.
He's an unguided Jedi. Misguided, but unguided. Like he basically unguided. Goes to the moon of Ashla and like meditates underwater. And like, what is he looking for? Yeah, like he just doesn't have a North Star.
Yeah, I know. And this book, that's exactly what's going on. This book does a really good job of painting that because here's the thing. Here's the argument of like, so this is utilitarian versus I can't think of the other thinking. I used to teach ethics, but here's the thing. Like, so yes, if you're dealing with utilitarianism, you're focused on the outcome, right? And if the outcome's good. And so part of the argument is if Elzar Mann is doing good because he's afraid other people of what other people think of him, right? However, where that starts fraying and falling apart is what does that person do when they know
he's watching,
no right? one is watching? And what happens is he slaughters someone and ends up accidentally blowing up an entire space station and killing a ton of Jedi because he doesn't have a moral center, right? Because he's not, his moral center is external to
and
himself.
And he was introduced to us as flighty. It was sort of like, well, he's so super talented. Yeah. He's like, I'll do this with the Force and then I'll do this with the Force. Everything came to him easy. And he just, but like, he was just like, whatever, just sort of whimsically going through life, doing whatever he felt like, cause he felt like he was entitled to it. And, you know, but like he's never had to really like look inside himself and be like, why do I stand for it and why do I stand for it?
Yeah. And the other thing that's super damning that or not damning, but super interesting that and a different take on kind of Star Wars is that like I think Vernestra mentions like it's in an eternal moral monologue. She doesn't say it out loud, but she recognizes that with any other group of Padawans, he would have been the most powerful. Yeah. Jedi, but he's cursed to be the least powerful of three people who are the three most powerful Jedi of all time, which is like that curse of being like the weakest amongst the strongest.
Yeah, but
right,
I,
it's
I mean,
really
I
interesting.
Think he's weakest because of his ethics and because of his mindset.
Yeah, like, yeah.
Stellan was not anything special.
Not when he taps into the dark.
Yeah, I mean, right. If he taps into the dark, he's like stupid powerful. But I don't know if he's more powerful than Avar. Because like Avar has done like really insane stuff. I mean, just her whole battle meditation thing that she does is like next. That's OP.
She's
and like the
OP,
fact that she was able to just like navigate
the
through
thing
the storm
with Jedi
wall.
Is that I feel like the writers identified this pretty early when they were setting out to write a lot of Jedi characters. Is that they like looked at the Jedi archetype and they said to themselves, like, what is sort of the defining flaw of this archetype?
Yeah.
And I have to imagine is that the Jedi are, and some of them, I think some of them are not this way, but I think a lot of them are emotionally underdeveloped, essentially.
Yeah.
They shy away from deep emotions because they have to analyze it, you know, in every single way. And it just, it's almost like paralyzing for them. And I think Elzar Mann's a prime example of an emotionally underdeveloped person where he has these deep emotions, but he is scared to act on them. He represses a lot of it. And then when Jedi die on like Valo and he starts going crazy, it's like he's just being overwhelmed by it because he just doesn't know how to process.
Right. Yeah.
He just doesn't know. A lot of Jedi don't have that processing chip. And that's why I think they juxtapose Imri Kintaros against Elzar Mann with Vernestra because she's like, oh, Imri understands there's like a pro. Is it Reeth Silas or him that has a proclivity to the dark? I forget.
But, Imri. I mean, he was on my bingo card.
And so I'm like,
going to the dark.
But Imri is like, I choose to help people. Like, he is finding his North Star. He's finding a way to sort of. He's maybe suffered so much trauma at this point that he's now just. He's felt a lot of the emotional spectrum and he's dealing with the heavy hearted emotions that basically the Jedi aren't there to suppress or repress or tell him not to think about it or think of the moment or focus on, you know, focus up or whatever. You know, it's like he's actually dealing with it. And I just think Elzar is a character that was basically like, I don't know, was he like the younger brother figure to Avar and Stellan and sort of like was he just kind of like, did he have it easy because he had best friends who always like he was so jovial with his friends for so long that he actually never processed anything too deep and too dark. Were easy. I imagine
he'd do whatever he wanted. Yeah, I mean, I think it's very telling that like there's so much diversity in these series, yet the big three are like two white men and a blonde haired, blue eyed female.
That was a weird choice, I thought.
I think it's intentional, though. Because I think for exactly what you're talking about, man. It's just like, and they're the older generation, right? And really, this focuses on the younger generation that's the more diverse one that's coming up and trying to find themselves. And they're all looking up to this, you know, white, blonde hair, blue eyed, like, you know, like they're heroes, but it's just like, well, they have their flaws and they're coming through. You know, I mean, Avar Chris less so, but and Stellan, you know, did his best, but I feel like he was essentially impotent to deal with this whole thing. And Elzar is clearly like real low emotional, you know, emotional intelligence. And that's going to be his biggest flaw, you know, as we're seeing. Like, I don't know if he's going to be able to rectify it. I think he's just going to, you know, follow his emotions, try to like have a relationship with Avar. Avar is like, what do you like? We've got a whole like galaxy to like help here. We can't be thinking about this. And then like, I don't know what happens to Elzar after that. You know, maybe he does fall down a dark hole or just, you know, gets, you know, finds out who he really is.
He has to be one of the lost 20. He has to be one of the lost 20. Like, you cannot get through these stories and not add one of the 20 to lost 20. Like, you can't get through this big of a crisis point and not add a bust, right? And have it there. It's just, you got to connect it. But I want to build off what you said, because again, to kind of like metagame it a little bit or whatever, it's just like these stories are written by
millennials
and the internet.
I was gonna
what's
say
that?
Millennials, but a lot of what? Not really.
But no, they're well, they're Gen Xers, millennials, probably like right on the cusp, like us or fully millennials. But like, but they're also like, having followed them on social media, they're very cognizant of the world. They're what you would call woke, if that wasn't a bad thing to say about and people, right? Like they are writing a lot of, it's not, it's a good thing, but they're writing a lot of individuals. They're writing with from a lot of different perspectives. They're coming from a lot of perspectives. They're writing a lot of different people with a lot of different diversity in terms of every type of their neurodivergent characters, there's a lot of variety in
sexual orientation,
preferences, all those things, right? So they're not unaware of this. And that group sat down and broke this down. So they chose to make the three people white characters, who two males and a blonde woman. And so I'm wondering if this is turning into, as we're kind of talking about, a tale of putting of what privilege does, right? I think that the Elzar Mahan story is very much a story of privilege, right? Of a person who grew up in an era where very privileged, didn't have to question things, and now is being tested and is not standing up to being up to the test.
Yeah, no, I think you're dead on. I think that's exactly the reasoning behind it. Yeah,
which is a worthwhile story to tell.
It was a bizarre choice when I first saw it, because I thought the sequels just had too much empowered white people stuff happening. And I was just like, we need to really change it up in terms of like the most powerful Jedi characters that you're sort of focusing on, that you explicitly talk about. But I love the one for one sort of representation of sort of Western colonialism and, you know, the eroding, you know, now eroding sort of like, like white Western sort of like controlling evil, you know, sort of like systems of power that have been placed in the world for so long. Like this, it's I love that they're sort of doing that one for one, and then showing this explosion of diversity coming out of this terrible sort of like, you know, racial bias and this racist sort of like world that we experience, and we're just like, this all needs to end. And so I love that one for one sort of like, let's check Western society, let's check what you think are all what that is, and make it show that it's flawed, and show that these people are they can't rest on privilege, they're just as flawed as anyone, and they're going to fall, and then a new age is coming. And I feel like that's perfect. I feel like that's really, really good stuff. But I yeah. wonder what they do with Avar Chris, because like you're saying all of this, and I imagine that then she has to tragically die as well. Like
maybe
essentially. Because like it all has, they all have to die. Because you cannot do a white trio in a Star Wars tale and have them make it out and be like, yeah, it's hunky dory and these three white people, they save the day. You can't have white saviors. You can't have
I think if anyone survives, it's going to be Avar.
Yeah, and I think you can tell in a way that's not a white savior story of that the white person is saved, right? Like the story could be that she is saved by the others, right? Like that that is her story.
You don't think they're going to do some tie the beginning to the end and some song of the first.
Absolutely could. I could see her becoming one with the Force, right? Yeah. I think you could give her an ending of this. The other thing I was going to say is that it's slightly depressing as I'm thinking about this is like you're talking about like a new order coming, and we kind of skip ahead to see, and what we see is a more diverse Jedi Council, right? By the time we get to the other era, but part of what I'm a little worried about is like, are we also telling a story of that like because of the people who put the Jedi Order into function at this time, who aren't aware of the world the way it is, who are ignorant of the way the world is, aren't thinking about how their actions are affecting others and helping to create things like the Nihil, put this younger generation through the wood chipper because they're the front line of the war, right? Do we lose this generation of diverse, powerful story of powerful people because of the war that the ignorance of the higher of the older generation put them through? Not to get political.
This is political. Yeah. We're doing the political now. I feel like that's another point that I haven't even considered, which is that like a lot of the front line that's out there fighting and out in the inclusion zone. I mean, like these are the up and coming young Jedi who are far more diverse than this trio, right? And this trio is not diverse at all. And they're dying and they're suffering, but it's still Elzar and Avar get to reunite. Like it's like there's still these happy
Elzar's hanging out.
Yeah, Elzar's just Jedi, hanging out being Council. Like a cool Jedi, and then I love that Vernestra Rowe checks him in this book. And yeah, I'm just, he has to be one of the 20. Like Avar has to sadly, I think sacrifice herself or something at the end of the books. Like we have to show that there needs to be a check on sort of Western colonialism, Western, you know, society.
I mean, Avar's like trials, if we learned anything from the last book, right, which was what, Eye of Darkness or something. I forget what the first novel of three was. It Eye of Darkness. They all sound the same to me. I can't. Anyways, in the last novel where she's like escaping, like she's really going through this battle where like she has these expectations set on her, and it's her trying to meet the expectations of being the hero of Hetzel, and like trying to, you know, she does actually pull it off. And I just think her heart's in the right place, but like it's almost like she was a martyr from birth, and you know, I could see it. Situation where, you know, she's like, well, this is who I am. I am just this martyr that like was created. I have to be this hero, and I have to give myself, like, I'm going to give all of myself because that's my role in the world.
Right. That's how the books start, right? In a lot of ways, it's this beautiful song of like, she's connected to everyone, and everything's connected. So, yeah, there's going to be a dirge. There's going to be a requiem.
Yeah.
Right. There's got to be an end to that song, essentially.
Yeah. Really. That's a nice metaphor there, homie.
Yeah.
I mean, so this book does move the plot forward a little bit. Avon gets into Lightning Crash, which is the space station that controls a storm wall, but it's like there's redundant systems, something. She messes some things up, but ultimately it doesn't look like much happened, but they're able to create a sort of pipeline to get people out at the end of this book. And the, you know, and our characters here are committed to doing that. So, you know, so there's now going to be some leaks in the storm wall, and that's going to open up a bunch of things. And Avon is now like with all the best minds in the galaxy working on how to break the wall. So I think, you know, soon, obviously this is the, you know, third act. So it's going to come down and, you know, some things are going to happen there. I don't know. I've got a couple bits and bobs that I wanted to talk about.
Wait, are we in Aslan Corner yet? Are we almost there?
You want to do Aslan Corner? Let's do that.
I want to just finish with Aslan Corner.
This is the epilogue of the book.
Granular notes, if we have any. But just he says everything but Sith in that final epilogue, and it's very upsetting. Uh-huh. I'm like, he's just talking about the fear and the fear. I was like, okay, like very fear is the mind killer sort of like scene in Star Wars. But
yeah,
it was just like when he alludes to fear over and over again, I was like, this has to be about the Sith essentially. Like they thrive on fear. Mm. Like that is, it's like their juice.
It's their juice. Fear, their juice. Anger, hate, suffering.
So that's my other question is like, I just realized, like, do we know the origin of that Yoda quote? Like, where he first came up with that? Because did he come up with that out of something that we're going to see during this?
What I've been fascinated with for the longest time. Yoda has interacted with the dark side before the prequel trilogy.
Yeah.
And I am so hyper-focused on that.
Yeah, well, Yoda's like, the one that brought Asmodeus
in. He seems to have knowledge of something.
And we're talking about the Nameless, like, create the fear, right? Like, and the fear with the Nameless stuff is, like, it leaves a lasting imprint on those that are affected by it, right? It's not like they're just afraid and then they're fine after it. It has a trauma effect to the ones that are exposed to it. So it's
if Aslan Rel told Yoda that, like that line, it would make perfect sense, honestly. Because he, like, you know, it takes one to know one kind of like line, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Like, they're like, they're just cool stuff that I wouldn't be surprised if they use.
Yeah, it's true. We get a little Reeth Silas cameo. Love that character as well. Also a super dork that happens to be great at lightsaber combat. Great OP character. And they even let fly that Avon Saris might have a small crush on Reeth.
Yep.
I'm shipping them hardcore. That's like adorable.
Doesn't Vern hang out with them or something? She's like, why does she like him? I have to know why she likes
him. Like, what a dork.
Yeah.
But and Vern is like, you know, quarterback of the football team.
She's like in the danger room all the time, just like
I know, right?
Everything. Yeah. Pretty great. There's some other little like things here that I like, some meta stuff that was great. The biggest one probably I think it was a Vernestra quote that said, "Few things mattered more than caring for people and being cared for." That wasn't attachment. That was what it truly meant to be of the Force, love and acceptance. So this is more of the quandary that we've been talking about forever. Of like, well, how do they move on from attachment but like still have the thing? But like love and acceptance is like, that is central to being a Jedi, but like attachment's a different thing.
Yeah. So you're saying that, that Anakin was right.
Yep.
Which honestly, I think he's lying. I think he's not saying it with all honesty in that moment. But I think what he's saying is like an accidental moment of truth and clarity that he doesn't know he hit on.
Right, yeah.
The other thing I was going to say is that Escape from Valo builds on this a little bit, because there's a lot of discussion about attachment between Ram and these younglings and what does that mean, and they talk about it, and he's just like, he gets to the point of like, no, love is not attachment, love means letting go, love is what we need to be Jedi. Like, they are definitely trying to thread this needle, which
this
I
is all just trying to answer a couple basic questions of like, what does it mean to be like, what is the Jedi code, like, and I love that they're not giving it to us.
Yeah,
it just gives us these little like quips here and there that sort of like hints to what it is, but it's like, it's not definable. It's not like you can't write it in a stone tablet and live by it. It's just different. Yeah. And I mean, it's weird that they were like, all right, anything that looks like attachment, we're going to like neg on that and be like, you can't do it. Like, that's where they arrive at the Skywalker saga. But, you know, things are much more loosey goosey in this era.
Yeah. Well, because when things go real bad because of Avar and Elzar, that's where we get to the point of no love.
I mean, that
no
would be
love.
Great.
Yes.
Their torrid love affair.
Temptation of the Force. They fall madly in love. Next book. Tears of the Nameless. Tears.
Yeah. They get together.
And then Trials.
They're
the Jedi,
next dyad of like Sith. And then they just like take out all the Nameless and then like accidentally kill half the galaxy. Like, I don't know. It could be.
I think Elzar Man dies tears. And I think Avar has a major obstacle in Trials. And that's like a.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's the whole
I think
Requiem.
Tears of the Nameless speaks to compassion and empathy for the Nameless. Like, I think we're going to get their backstory, and I think it's going to be tragic. Like, they're not just like mindless killers. Like they, you know, they may be atrocities that need to eat.
What if they're products of dark science, like Sith science, like they're a proto science experiment.
Could
like
be.
So
they're like clones, like they had no control over their destiny. Like, I think it's going to be a moment of compassion for the nameless and what they're going through.
Interesting. And like, what were they, Sith weapons essentially? Like,
I don't think maybe. So because they,
It looked like they were used on Malachor or whatever, or Moribund.
Right.
It looks like they were used in that battle or something.
Were they used, or is the thing that was happening in this book used? Which is like, it's. I mean, it seems to all be coming out of the fact that they are experimenting with the nameless. So they do seem like these rather tragic beasts, right? That are like, distorted and really pathetic. Like when you get to some of the ones that have been like really tested on, they seem like lab rats.
Yeah, they're lab animals. That's what I'm saying.
Like,
there's a
real
rat
bad,
thing to
like,
them.
Just real pathetic.
They're definitely tortured creatures because like they're always hungry, and it's like, oh yeah, we're keeping, you know, it's not like a great thing. That's another thing we shouldn't skip over. So they created a bioweapon, which is like the effects the nameless has on the Jedi, it can have against a whole planet of like all life.
Yeah.
And it can destroy planets.
Yeah, which gives us a zombie movie trope in the middle of this book where someone gets his arm amputated.
That was fun.
To cut it off before
days
it spreads.
Later.
I'm like, oh, it's just zombies.
That's crazy.
Yeah,
Yeah, that was wild. That was a great scene. Yeah, no, this book was fun. It was super fun to read. I really enjoyed it.
It was a good.
I read it on the flight down to Florida, the flight back, and I finished it. Nice. And it was like super fun.
Sweet.
It was a fast read in that way. I love parallel storytelling. I love that you had the three plot lines going on, and I love that like they didn't necessarily all connect, but they dovetailed in the way that like everyone found what they're looking for and had to leave it behind, basically, right? And it was really interesting. And then having your man in the sky, having like just running comms,
right.
having your dandy running comms up in the ship with his pet dog, or the pet dog is kind of amazing.
Plinka.
I was like, this is great. Just keep cutting back.
There's a couple other like great quotes in here. One is, the Nihil were so bad at so many things, and yet they'd still managed to bring the Republic to its knees. It was, you know, and I was like, oh, this is the Chaos Caucus. This is minority rule through fear. It's like, if you can just create chaos, you can bring any empire to its knees. And like, the Nihil is very Marjorie Taylor Greene to me. Like, it's just...
100%.
Star Wars is always a commentary on...
MAGA nobodies who just gather together and just Jan 6 places constantly. And it's just like, get out of here. Like,
good times. I also love that... You know, actually, Grant, I wanted to ask you about this because you've been wanting this for a long time, and maybe both of you, but... Imri doesn't want, so we got so close to like the sexiest like lightsaber corner ever, where like Vernestra was going into town to buy parts to build a new lightsaber for Imri, and I was like, oh, what's she gonna buy, what style is she gonna use, what's she gonna do, like,
I know J6 has a bunch of parts,
I'm like, oh, let's go and all that, and she, it never happens because of the nameless ruining that too, and then, you know, but then like ultimately she's just like gives her crystal to Imri and he's like, nah, I'm good. Like, I don't even want a lightsaber. And like, he's still using the Force. He's still,
I forget which book it was, but I feel like he shouldn't have a lightsaber. He's
kind of clumsy with it anyways.
He feels a bolt pull to the dark.
Yeah. And he's just like, nah, I don't need that. And
That's why I think they juxtapose that next to Elzar. Cause they're like, Vernestra sees a good Jedi in Imri. She sees a terrible Jedi in Elzar.
Yeah.
Yep.
I believe her scouting report on that fully.
Agreed. Yeah,
someone who's looking at scouting reports deeply these days. I believe, you know, Burns look at all that. And I love where Imri came because like is at this point, because, you know, early I was like, oh, you know, we all had him like high up on the fall to the dark side list because he like, he's so empathetic and like feels everything. And we're like, oh, that's going to lead to something.
Not a good sign.
Yeah. That's going to take him somewhere.
He's feeling a lot. And the Jedi are like, focus on the mission. And he's just like, but I
feel stuff. Yeah.
Emotions.
And he just like slotted into like what it is, you know, I mean, that I'm just going to bring it up now. Cause I'm feeling it. That Charles Sewell short story from whatever that the last compilation that just came out. I forget the name of it.
But from Tales of Light and Life.
Yeah, Tales of Light and Life, I think.
Tales of Light and Life.
Yeah, and of Loden Greatstorm, and I guess it was Wreath was his no. Who's Loden Greatstorm's paddle? Keith Trennis. Trennis? No, Keith, no, yeah. That's Gears.
Bell Zedaphar.
There we go. But like
so many
that like that short story of him like them being stranded and having no options and being like, we're just gonna help.
So
we're
good.
Just gonna help the town.
Oh, Loden drops absolute knowledge bombs about the Jedi. If you like want to know the Jedi, I definitely read that story.
Yeah, Loden is really very much a like, you know, he's an Obi-Wan Kenobi that like sort of just like got chewed up in the system, but like, you know, like had a different set of outcomes that like he couldn't anticipate, and that's where he went. But like that will always be the Jedi to me. That short story of him going into the town and being like, they're hated by everyone. Mm-hmm. He's like, we're just going to help people. Like the micro, like that's kind of like the Jedi can't do the macro. They have to just be like on the ground in a place and just exist. And
just
like
help one
person at a time. And that's what they do.
One town at a time.
Yeah. The Living Force book we're about to review on the next episode,
I can't wait.
Which probably wind down soon because we got the more books to read.
Yeah. But, I need to go start reading.
The Living
Force,
I think, gets into a little bit of Palpatine's thought process. About sort of the Jedi and how to keep them busy and how they can get quote unquote chewed up by the system. And, sort of, you know, how to conflate bloat and make bloated sort of bureaucratical systems for them to function within. So they're just completely lost in the sauce.
Yeah.
Like it's just, they can't get so wrapped up in the institution. That's why I think it was good to have the Pathfinders essentially, the Wayseekers or whatever those Jedi are that are like, that go out there and kind of like all those Jedi seem to be the most enlightened ones, essentially.
Yeah.
The ones that like come back from deep space missions and stuff like that. They're the ones who are like, they're almost like Star Trek Enterprise level, like have dealt with the different morals on different worlds and different, you know, things that feel sort of like far outside the galaxy. And they've learned from those experiences.
Yeah.
They're very, who's our favorite who died? That was like literally our favorite Jedi, Orla Jereni or something. That was
She was the Wayseeker, right?
Coolest
Jedi. Yeah, she was the coolest Jedi.
She's the coolest Jedi ever.
There's so many that I've forgotten. How many?
Her casual relationships with I forget the guy's name, but she had like some buddies that did different things that like her generation and like their dynamic was so cool and like.
I mean, Barish Sylvan is my favorite Jedi. Mm. We got to do a draft soon because, like, I know we did like a Jedi draft,
no, but
I
don't High Republic. High Republic.
Yeah, swaggiest High Republic. High Republic Jedi.
Like, swagged out favorite. Yeah.
I mean, I think we did one in like
Xylon.
Did we?
Yes,
way back.
We did one way back, but in Orla was, I think, my number one. Because, like, she just lives the coolest life. But I can't remember the guy's name. It was like Cantab or Corin or something like that, and he was
I think
he was like Wreath's first master.
Yes.
And like he was really cool and he was like but it was we gotta wrap this up. I could just keep talking about Star Wars forever. I do love the High Republic. There's so much in there. It's just like for my appetite, I'm like, can we just get the rest of the series? Let's go. You know, I want to know where this is going. And then I'll be really sad when it's over. But, you know, hopefully it'll lead to more series and all that. But, we will be covering Light of the Jedi. That's that book just came out this week. So we're going to give that a couple weeks and do that. More Bad Batch next week. And, like, I think before this month is over, we're going to get a skeleton crew announcement. I'm sure of it.
Before this month's over or within a month. Yeah, because I don't want to like because I think your May 4th is a good
May 4th is a
good call.
Yeah, that's my target there. Yeah, I think
Ben Comac Vitus.
Thanks, buddy.
Comac. I forgot about Comac Vitus.
Yeah,
there we got there.
I was like Corin.
That guy was right.
Comac Vitus was a real G, and like he was just like I think he ended up taking the same vow, but like. Yeah, Barish Fowl. Like, yeah, they did a great job developing all these Jedi, and there's so many different flavors there. You know, the thing that like I'm just like dying for is what Rey does, because she's got some books. We know the history. We kind of feel like she should know the history. What is the next evolution? And it's like, are you, so you're building a Jedi Academy, but like at this point, I feel like you can't have it merge with the bureaucracy. You need to cut bureaucracy. The Jedi need to
be fully apart. What she needs to do is make sure the top three strongest Jedi are diverse. That's what she needs to do for my sake.
Right now, top three, top two are her and Finn. And then the third one.
Yeah, I hope Finn's a Jedi.
Third one
I
mean, should be Grogu, probably. Yeah. You know, like her, like Rey, Finn, Grogu. Wild. That should be the top.
That's a little bit too like all the main characters, all the characters you know. I hope they introduce some new characters as well.
Like as of today, those are the three. Like in the sequel era.
Yeah, I would like Finn to be the sergeant at arms, like
My only fear is if your top four are like Rey, Finn, Grogu, and Mr. X. I wonder who's going to turn to the dark side.
Yeah.
Who's going to?
He's wearing a bright red shirt, like a bright red.
Yeah,
like...
That's my only fear.
It's Adam Driver with a really short haircut.
Oh man, fun.
All right. Yeah, I was intentionally ran this bad boy along tonight because, like,
we're glad to have you back. This is fun. Yeah. This is the huge, which I'm happy about.
Yeah. Oh, wait, 2 hours and 15 minutes. Yep.
All right.
But I'm just stoked to talk about Star Wars with y'all as I am every week. We just recorded a longer. We always talk for like 4 hours a night about Star Wars. Like,
I know, it's true.
And record about an hour and a half.
I usually maybe do 20, 30 minutes of like a rewatch or a reread after we do the pod. So it's like, I build that in, you know?
Totally. But we did it this week, man. We'll talk to you next week, and who knows what news is going to drop. Can't wait for it either way. So
I know.
Thanks for hanging out, having a couple cocktails with us at the bar. We'll talk to you next week on
Cantina Chronicles.
Oh, shoot.